Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. My name is Alex Q, and welcome to Season 2, and the first episode of Season 2 of Miscast. How much can you handle?
Woo!
I had at least a snigger.
More than you can imagine, Alex. I can handle
much more. I've been handling too much.
Oof. I need a break. Already? Yeah, for people already. Who don't know, we've been talking for about 20 minutes off air already, so hopefully we'll capture some of this good stuff. So, this is actually our 12th episode, if you don't count the seasons, and you guys know how, you know the drill. We're using the expertise of our co-host, and we have a special guest who you've already heard, and the idea is to help improve your generalship, expertise, and enjoyment of your gaming experience. We're going to talk nonsense and sense, and it's the podcast that this week has been deep diving aliens. Ooh. Because of David Grush, the whistleblower ex-intelligence official in the US, dropping the alien bomb onto Congress.
Now,
aren't they? Aliens are real. They exist. They're out there. Yeah.
They're out there. Did you guys see any of this stuff, by the way?
They could be in this amazing podcast.
I see them walking the streets of Portsmouth, to be fair.
I went to Morecambe once. Does that count?
If any listeners from Morecambe, no offense intended. But yeah, have you guys seen the
No, I intended full offense if you're from Morecambe. Fuck you, you're a weird bunch. Okay.
Wow. Matt's coming swinging.
He's coming strong. You can send your, well, maybe I'll introduce Matt first, and then you can send your complaint straight to that Twitter. Sorry, to your X handle.
The truth is out there.
Yeah. So did you guys see the any of the questions, by the way?
No. I would talk about Gillian Anderson for a while, now that you've talked about X-Files.
Oh, but top wank. Excellent.
I've got zero interest in aliens, though. Mark Brooks, on the other hand, lovely Mark from the Welsh team. Yeah. He is getting very wet over all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Is he? Is he a big alien file, is he?
Oh, yeah, when we went to LBO. We went near Area 51 and he got all frothy. But you know that it's just a way of, just like this whole alien Congress thing is just a way of distracting Americans from the real issues of today without getting too deep. It's just another distraction.
Yeah, but what if, Owen, they are actually real?
They're scraping the barrel now, aren't they? You know, of the scrap distractions. They're like, oh, fuck, we've got to bring out the aliens now.
Yeah, where do we go from here?
Yeah, you should see some of the questions. My favorite question, because I got these up, because it was I mean, even for you, Owen, if you're not into the whole alien thing, that's fine. But what you should do is you should watch some of the Republican questions that came through, because they're amazing. So if you were gonna ask someone whether you thought aliens were real or not, you would ask stuff like, was there a ship? Who was piloting the ship? Did they look like a ET? Whatever. Republican Chris Collins posed, this is my favorite question, he thought was on everyone's mind. He said, have you watched Ancient Aliens? And what's your comment on the series?
Cutting right to the heart of the issue there, right?
I like the way he presumes that they've actually watched it.
His comment was, I haven't seen it. That was it. And what's even funnier is the guy that just left. That was it. That was his only question.
Well, this is bullshit.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. I've been deep diving aliens.
Well, I've got 2 points to raise on this. So thank you for bringing it up, Alex.
Please. Yeah, please. Yeah. Is it related to 40K at all?
Yes. One of my points is related to 40K. So
good. Please continue.
Whilst I'm not into the idea that aliens are real, I love aliens in culture. So I've just got a recommendation. Have any of you seen the Jordan Peele movie Nope?
Nope.
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
I think that was possibly my favorite film of last year. Amazing. So I would highly recommend. And yeah, it's brilliant.
It is on my list. On my list of, you know, just there's so much to watch now and, you know, so much culture.
I don't know how you get to do anything other than writing filthy Warhammer lists, to be honest with you, Matt, but I'm sure we'll get to that later.
Well, see, that takes me 5 minutes. That's like a GIF.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And the rest of it is just like, yeah, whatever.
What did you watch?
Asteroid City. The one new Wes Anderson film. That's what it's called, isn't it?
I've heard that's good, yeah.
I thought it was terrible. I was really disappointed. I love Wes Anderson films, but it was too Wes for me. It was like...
He went too deep.
He went too deep. I almost felt like halfway through the film, I felt like Wes was taking the piss out of me.
He probably was.
Yeah, probably was. That's the thing. I was like, what?
Are there aliens in Asteroid City?
Oh, well, I don't want to do any spoilers.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. I mean, Owen's just completely spoiled Nope by referencing it.
Hey, you find out pretty soon.
Sorry, you had a second point, Owen.
Yeah. So one of my favourite sci-fi movies is James Cameron's Aliens.
Oh, not Avatar. Oh, that's one.
No.
No.
That sounded like such a snob. Sorry.
No, Darren.
I saw that at the IMAX when it came out, and all the staff were dressed in like blue body paint and stuff. That was pretty cool, but the movie was questionable. Yes, so I'm actually 40K curious at the moment, and I'm building and painting a Death Watch army because it reminds me of the...
The fuck off this podcast right now.
Listen, you're a guest. You can't tell me that. I'm literally...
Get off.
Some Death Watch veteran.
No one gives a shit about your Death Watch. Ooh, I've got some fucking ammo. I've painted my armor black, you know.
Mate, but they seem like the aliens. That's what I'm telling myself. They're also really quite good from...
Hang on. Yeah. But like, they paint their armor black and they kill Xenos.
Yes, very well.
I mean... Come on now, Owen. That would have been an amazing reference if any of the congressmen had done that, like, as a question. What do you think of Xenos scum? I would have approved if that was a question from the US Senate.
They're Republicans. We know what they say, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're all about stamping down on illegal aliens, aren't they?
Oh, dear.
Oh, this is great.
I don't know if I can be associated with this podcast.
Well, okay. I don't agree with that, obviously. Okay, I'm going to stop talking now, Alex. Please continue.
Right. So let's get rid of enough of the general chit-chat already. Co-hosting, you've heard his sexy serenades already. He hasn't screamed out pervert or football yet. He goes by at Positive Victim on X. He is... Darren Watts.
Sorry.
I'm just going to call it Twitter for the rest of my life because I'm old and I don't like change. That's okay, isn't it?
X. You have to do an X have with you seen, your hands.
Yeah, you don't tweet anymore now. You post and you repost. They've changed all that.
I'm just gonna retweet and hashtag retweet. That's all.
So how's it going, Dan?
I've had a lovely day. Do you want to hear about my lovely day?
Please, I would love to.
So I'm halfway through painting a skull cannon. And it's come out much better than I anticipated. And I tend to hate painting because it makes my eyes stream. And then I've got to paint with streamy eyes and it's really difficult. But recently I've been fasting and my eye streaming has completely stopped, which is a lovely benefit that I didn't think would happen. And I've lost a stone and a half. So the other day I ran the entirety of Hillsey Lines, which is about 5 kilometres, which is the most I've ran for about 15 years in one go. So like my health is fasting. I can't recommend it enough at the moment. I'm really enjoying it. And that meant that I didn't have streamy eyes today and I actually enjoyed painting for the first time in a very long time. And then after halfway through, Alex came into the bedroom. And she yoinked me away to look at a church and a village hall for our wedding. It was the first time standing there in a church talking to a priest. It really hit me that fucking hell, this is happening. and I got very excited. Absolutely lovely. And then came back. Alex made a dar, which was absolutely banging. And now I'm talking to you fine chaps. So I just had a really lovely. It's a good day to be Darren today.
Nice.
That sounds like a good day to be around. Was the priest one of the super hype, the hype merchant priests?
No,
the ones I'm talking about.
I thought he was really, really sweet. So he was like very respectful of like our story and our like we're not religious, you know.
Yeah.
But he seemed very sort of switched on. In that regard, he was like, you know, it doesn't matter what we believe, what I believe in compared to you, what you believe compared to me. But the fact that we, you know, I just really want to help you celebrate your love for each other. So, it was really nice. He mentioned the things that he wasn't willing to compromise on within the church. Like he doesn't want us to play music like Star Wars, like someone requested.
Yeah, he didn't point at you and shout, "Heathen, how dare you come into this house?"
No, not at all. He was we had a good
long chat. Cool.
We had a good long chat about how the sort of church is trying to be a bit more modern and accepting, and
okay.
I thought that was really interesting as well. It's just a lovely day.
Have you got the date yet?
No, we're not that. The trouble is with Alex, right? She will change her mind. This is like the third time she's changed her mind in as many weeks. So, like getting a date out of this is going to be
what? She changed her mind about whether she wants to do it or not.
Well, she naughty. So first of all, she wanted to elope. And then she wanted to do it in her horse field. And her horse field's got like a 20% incline. And if it rained, it would be a muddy field. So I had to gently get her off that idea. But she really wanted to come down the aisle on top of Harvey, her horse. I was like, fucking hell.
I was going to make a joke about that when you were saying the church was modernizing and you're fucking literally going to do it.
You have to be on a horse, though. Or is she would she get off the horse?
I don't think she's thought that far. She just wants Harvey at her wedding, but that can't.
Right.
I think she's now agreed that's probably not the best idea. He's also an incredibly nervous horse. Oh, God, I'm terrified of horses.
This wedding would be a disaster then. You got a nervous horse and you don't like them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're terrifying horses. If they knew how powerful they were. When I first got with Alex, she took me to go see Harvey and he kicked at the front. And I was like, what the fuck? He like kicked the front of his stable because he wanted to get fed. Or he was also nervous of me, I think, as well. She said he doesn't particularly like men. because she rescued him from travelers. Anyway, he kicks out front. And I was like, they can kick out front. And she was like, yeah, of course. I've always thought if you're near a horse, it's, you know, don't go behind them because they can kick you. But at the front, you'll be perfectly fine. And she's like, no, they can kick to the front and they can kick to the side. So basically, you can't piss about anywhere near a horse. They're well, a fucking
sorry, huge. Darren.
No, go on.
Just going to say, like, if you've ever played any sort of cavalry in an army, it's always the horses, you know, the tearing hooves. And
they always do better.
They always do better, you know.
They always do better. That's what I like to shout when I've got my cavalry attacks.
What's that?
Embarrassing horse death.
Right. Enough of you today, Darren, because we need to get on with it. So we need to introduce our next sexy co-host. He is the sexy socked seductor himself. You can find him at Sock on My Lollipops on the gram. He's at OJ180 on X. He is the Owen Jackson. Hi, Owen.
Hello. Hi.
All right.
Good. Yeah, very, very good. Having a really rambunctious evening, aren't we? This is like a sort of frat party kind of Age of Sigma podcast. I feel it feels a little off kilter. I would say it's because I've been drinking booze, and it's not. I've been drinking tea, but just everything's a bit giddy, isn't it?
8 o'clock and you've had coffee.
Yeah, 10 to 9 and I've been a cup of tea. Well, I had to play TTS last night at about 11:30 and I had a cup of tea and I had a really shit night's sleep.
Half 11 at night.
Yeah, because I was playing somebody on the East Coast. No, not on the East Coast, in Central America. I played someone in Oklahoma. His name was
not Paul. Near New York on the East Coast, no?
No, nowhere near New York.
Okay.
No.
Okay, so where, sorry? Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, yeah. So shout out to Paul. Had a fun game. Well, it wasn't a fun game, but we had a
Shout out for the fun game.
Shit game.
No, it was
fuck you, Paul. Yeah.
No, it just wasn't really fun for him because I gave him first turn and he killed my screens and then I killed everything except two of his wizards. Two turns because I doubled him.
Right.
Hashtag
steady on, you know.
I know exactly.
You're playing KO.
No. I don't know how to play KO, do I? No, I'm very well, thank you. I've been playing lots of Warhammer. I haven't been working much, and that's been good. Yeah.
Awesome.
When's
your next one, then?
I'm going to have a weekend off.
What?
Yes, I know.
Okay. You feeling all right?
I did three in a row. Yeah, I'm feeling fine. How are you?
Three in a row is pretty good, yeah, to be fair, yeah. Okay.
Three in a row, that's, you know, come on, that's rookie numbers.
I've got a break this weekend, and then I've got Blackout. Yeah, Blackout.
Oh, that's the weekend after, okay.
Yeah,
it's like 120-odd people going to that, isn't it?
105, actually. Yeah,
it's big. Fucking fantastic. Excellent.
Yeah, so shout out to Chris. I know I got contacted by Christopher from the Danish team, who's coming over for his first UK event.
Oh, sick.
So we've got...
Oh, yeah, I played him at... What did I play, Matt? Mark's Blood Tithe. I played him at Blood Tithe.
Nice. Yeah. And then I also got contacted by a chap called Lee, who's holidaying from Australia. So the Welsh team are going to lend him an army and he's going to play. So, yeah, feels nice. Feels like the community's...
Wow. He's come all the way from Australia to go to a UK tournament. That is some effort, eh?
Dedication. You better win now, eh?
Are you going to slap him off in two turns?
I hope so. playing Warhammies, trying to be a good human, usual stuff.
You're still on the corn train?
I had a game on Friday, and it made me really sad. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about how we're all so emotionally invested. I was talking to a couple of the guys at the Bad Moon Cafe today because they were talking about how they dip in and out of 40k a lot. Boris and Will, a couple of the owners of the Bad Moon Cafe, and Boris is a really high level 40k player, and he was kind of talking about, you know, he's playing Gene Stealers at the moment, who are really, really good, and kind of, even though he won all his games, he was feeling a bit so, you know, we all ride this emotional roller coaster. Well, most of us do. Matt, who's our guest tonight, sorry to bury the lead there or the lead, whatever you say, but he just plays the filth, so never really has any emotional.
Whoa. I'm all feeling, baby. I play it as it feels good, okay?
Yeah, no, you play it till it gets nerfed and then you drop it.
He's a vibe.
Sorry, I didn't realize I was coming here to be character assassinated.
He named all his characters, though. He is very narrative.
Yeah, exactly. Owen chose violence this evening. Woke up, chose violence.
It's the roast episode. Did you sent me that message, Alex, and you said we're roasting Matt tonight.
That was the message. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. good to know.
I'm sort of on the corn train, but I have got some other ideas, and I might be taking something different to Blackout. But I'm not saying.
Does that mean
I
can borrow your corn in the future? Your summons.
You can borrow any army you like, as long as you don't give it back to me like Math Mallow gave me back one of my armies.
Of course.
God, I'm in a spicy mood tonight.
More shots. Jesus Christ! Right. Well, before Owen assassinates any more listeners, let's get our lovely guest in. So, some say he's attended more tournaments than Owen has.
No. Good grief.
Some say he's the Charlie in the Chocolate Factory of the Age of Sigmar world after winning not one, but two golden tickets. Some even say that he has two silent letters in his name. You can find him at M. Goldsborough on X. He is, was Team Wales, maybe in the future.
Steady the hell on now.
Steady the hell on.
Multiple GT winner. It's Matt G. Hello, Matt.
Hello. First things first, Team Wales forever. Second things first. Wait, that doesn't make sense. Second thing, second. I don't just play the filth, Owen. I'm not going to let that slide. I'm coming back to that. I'm all about playing what you love. And I never sell anything.
It's all about the vibes.
You know, it's all about the vibes. It's all about the feel of the moment. I get bored, you know. That's why I like to hop around. So, yeah. Hi, everyone. What's up?
And by the third way, things first, what are the two missing vehicles?
The G and the H at the end.
I don't know. I've lost them, Darren.
Oh.
Yeah, the G and the H. Silent G, silent H.
I thought you were adding letters to create a rude word. Oh.
I could add some letters, you know. If you all want to pick a letter to add, I'll get my name changed.
Yeah, I'm going to have to think of it.
It's quite funny, actually. I did everyone personalized, like, 9-inch measuring sticks for everyone to go for the Welsh team when we went to Worlds. And I got Matt's name wrong
Look, you're not the first person. Don't worry. Honestly, I got a letter once. Well, I just put an extra O in. It was like a, it was
you put
Borough,
an extra Owen. Bro. You put an Owen in the middle of your name.
As
Matt Owen Goldsborough.
Well, I did correct it though, didn't I, Matt? I got you
a
correct one.
You did. And
it was Matt.
I cuddle it every night when I go to bed.
Drop it, Darren.
So you've just moved, haven't you, Matt? You were saying?
I have just moved. So I've been unpacking and building a cabinet. In fact, today I just finished some display cabinets for all my Warhammer. So I'm now staring quite proudly, because it's the first time I've ever got a display cabinet, at all my painted Warhammer, and I have a lot of fucking Warhammer.
Yeah. It's always when people start putting out, they're like, oh my God, how much have I actually?
Yeah. Priorities, obviously, you know, priorities. We can eat and sleep later. But yeah, as long as the dust doesn't touch my beautiful models.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, thanks for coming on. It should be a fun one. The first 20 minutes already of absolute nonsense. So yeah, great. Apologies to Steve and Jack. Missed half of it. Right.
I bet they just skip it, don't they? Surely, you know.
I wish there was a way of not letting people skip it. I'd make everyone listen to the start. But anyway, right. The Sigmar section of this podcast. We're talking about matches, if you didn't get it from my amazing pun. Matches. So we did do an episode with the lovely Laurie Huggett Wild about matchups, where we talked about the team kind of green versus red. And we've had lots of questions about, well, how do you even assess a match up in the first place? How do you know if a green's green or how's red's red? And obviously, a lot of this is going to be down to the player and subjective. But we thought we'd give you some examples from our lovely experts about how they go about assessing their matchups and why. So we're going to, and since they've all been to Feud at the Fens, when was it? Last weekend? Weekend before? Last weekend?
Feud on the Fens.
Yeah.
No, feud
in the Fens.
Ah,
oh, I thought it was no. There was multiple uses of it. I deep dive on the feud drama here. I saw it both used as on and in by the organizers. So
it's not even.
I'm not even sure.
Organizers, you got to get your on and your ins right. So it might have been in the Fens or it might have been on the Fens, but they all went. Sure. All our hosts went and our guest. So we're going to talk about their matches, how they assessed their matchup going into it and whether it fits with that matchup. So that's what we're going to do. Just a quick thank you to say thanks to everyone for your really lovely comments and questions. I do, well, between me and Darren, we do get through the X messages. So thank you very much for sending them in. We do really appreciate it. And it's very warm and heartwarming to get them all. So thank you very much. Right, let's kick this off. Matt,
yeah.
Let's go for day one, the nerve-wracking game one. So you were, just for the listeners, you were playing your Space Lizards, weren't you?
I was playing Happy Fun Time Space Lizards, sort of. It was, you know, Croak, the Trog Bomb. I was still running the Trog Bomb. I still think the Trog's pretty good. It was Croak, the Trog Bomb, all the stuff that makes it work, the Astrolith. The other Slan, some Saurus Guard, and then two Snake Basties and some Endless Spells. So I was, you know, there. I was there to do the magic, bring the Mortal Wounds, and cast and summon a lot of shit, basically, yeah.
And were you primarily playing it a bit like a castle build? Were you being very aggro? How were you kind of using it, just as a reference
for listeners? It was a sort of a castle that unpacked, but it was an early unpack, mainly because everything tended to be dead. Sort of pretty quick.
Yeah.
You sort of, you know, use the screens and then the Basties to sort of pin people and sort of buy yourself time while Croak and does all the magic and the Basties, you know, grind them down. And yeah, it operates in multiple phases. It just sort of kills you really quickly with mortal wounds, splash damage. Hell, it's yep. Great.
Okay. So for day one, I guess we could take it in game by game or day. I thought day might be a bit nicer. So for day one, would you say your first three games, and we can go into it individually, I guess, would you say they were good matchups for you when you saw them, or would you say there were any kind of medium ones, or are there any bad ones in there?
So I think for my first, I say I had two medium matchups and then sort of like an easy one. And so my game one was Fire Slayers. It was Fire Slayers, okay. It was like Hearthguard blocks. But it had all the anti-magic tech, had the icon for the spell ignore. It had the Ashcloud rune. If you don't know what that does, the Ashcloud rune, it's a once used thing. It sort of makes everyone not visible to spells for a turn, basically. So that's, you know, that's annoying. But
is it to the next hero phase one, or is it just the battle round?
Yeah, I think it's to the next hero phase, that one.
So you might be able to get it off. For two, I guess. Yeah,
it's not quite as annoying as getting a whole army hosed off by a couple of frogs.
No,
I'm sorry, I'm going to lean into that, but that's fine. That's my only little dig. One thing, may I interject ever so slightly, just as we're all friends here,
please. Yeah.
Before the tournament, what do you think your like? What do you not want to face before the tournament? Like.
I had two things I didn't want to face, and I ended up facing one of them. One of them was the Feck Infinite Ghouls. Thanks, Darren.
And the second one was the Null Myriad, of course, because you know that a 4-up spell ignore is fine, but a 2-up spell ignore is like, oh, I'm gonna have to change how I play the game. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so
you were saying, so the Firestones were one of the medium matchups, were they?
So it's a medium because, like, basically the Ashcloud rune is hard to, it's hard to keep your whole army holier than 12. So I'm able to get some bits early, which you have to push out into objectives, so I can just kill them. And then once that's gone, it's sort of the Fire Slayers player lives and dies on how many 4-up spell ignores they can pass. And eventually I will kill the Battlesmith. And then once the Battlesmith goes, everything's dead. So it's whether they can get through all my, you know, Basilodons and chaff walls before I can kill their Battlesmith and therefore then everything else. And so that just generally means that I have to give them like a turn, maybe in the two turns of like scoring the points. And so it ends up being like not a whitewash score, but it's still like a win on paper, but it's just like a hard win. It's like a harder win than I have to actually play the game rather than like, you know, phoning it in.
Yeah. And if they get too far ahead, you might not be able to claw it back. Hence the kind
yeah,
of
exactly. Meat.
Yeah.
Anyway, they could just roll
Yeah.
and then it could, Yeah.
Well, if they roll lots of 4-ups and they're on the points, yeah. So would you ever consider any of those as a red then? Or no? Do you think it's that kind of dicey heart 50-50?
No. Almost? I don't even say it's 50-50. I'd say it's like maybe 70-30 to me. Because like a lot has to go right for them to put me in a bag, because I can still like play the combat game with the Basties, and you know they count a lot on points because they're monsters, so I can, you know, score and you know, if he wants to, because the mission we were playing had 4 objectives because it was no risk, no reward, so they had to spread, and that means they can't, you know, they can't keep everything in range of the icon, so I can kind of play 2 and they can play 2, and it's, you know, yeah
perfect. And so for if this was like a team tournament, you would put this down as a, would you put it down as like a yellow? I mean, everyone uses different color coding systems, I think, but would this be a green for you?
It'd be like a green, but not like a, it's not like a 20-0. I'd be like a, yeah, it's like a, you know, a 15-5, 17-3 sort of.
Yeah. You know, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And then number two?
Number two, I played the only other Fek player, I think, who wasn't running Nagash and the Ghouls, and I deleted 1,500 points in one turn.
Wow.
And so that was, like, pretty green, I think.
Was that something you were expecting to do, though, before you started?
No. I thought I'd delete maybe 1,000 points, but... you know,
only 1,000.
I rolled a bit hot, and on the, you know, the croak mortal wounds and stuff, and yeah, it was a great game, good times, everyone had fun.
This was just honestly a Fek monster list or something, was it, that you were playing?
It was Gristlegore. It was, you know, a Terrorgeist, some horrors, some flayers, and then obviously more summon flayers and stuff. And just some ghoul chaff, pretty sort of like, yeah, bit of everything. Some, you know, little archregents and that.
So their idea was trying to get into you, but you're quite happy facing stuff that is rushing you, are you, normally with the
little... Oh yeah, the closer you get to me, the better. Like, because then I don't have to, you know, fuck around with teleporting over a trog and or teleporting croak in their face and bridging him back and doing all this. You know, I can just cast the spells, baby. I can just do the damage.
Yeah. So you're putting up your layers of screens essentially, and waiting for him to come to you, and then doing all the kind of mortal wound damage, basically.
Yeah, basically. I mean, yeah. You hit the, you know, the skinks die. I summon more skinks. You hit the Basties. They tag you, and also you can like. And then I've got the space for the stave in my list, so I can deep strike stuff 7 away, and you know, a lot of the actually a lot of the summons the Seraphon have access to +1 to charge on the scroll. So like Saurus Warriors, Raptodon Chargers, so you're actually looking like 6-inch charges with a reroll. So you can come in and pin stuff and, you know, sort of like dance around them with that as well, with all your summoning. A lot. It's a lot for people to deal with. Like it's
yeah.
And also, then you can put a massive fucking impassable terrain feature in their way, which you put the slam behind, so no one can ever charge them. I know I played Russ Veal in the last game, and he was a bit sad about that. His Stonehorns couldn't get into the slam ever.
And for the games like that, so you think before you even started playing that, for that, you was a heavy kind of green, I should really win this match, right?
Especially because it's not like the version where he's bringing back loads of stuff. So there's not much recursion. And it was a mission where I was, because it wasn't, I was able to like get the heroes straight away. So, you know, there's like, I can establish magic dominance. And I know we're in like, everyone's got primal dice, but like, whatever, right?
And is there anything, with these sorts of matchups, are you someone that looks at that and thinks, right, this is kind of a heavy green, I'm going to win this? Will you look at it and go, right, what's the one thing that I need to watch out for? Or do you just focus on, right, this should be in my favor, I'll just play my own thing?
Oh yeah. Like I always have like a priority kill list in my head, like Terror Guys must die turn one or two, you know, Flayers must die turn one or two, sort of thing. And like if I don't, like I know if that doesn't happen, then what I'm leaving my opponent is sort of like tools to play the game with and find their way out, you know, like I'm leaving them output, right? And I'm just, my list is trying to remove all their output as fast as possible so that they can't play the game.
And so for you, that sort of green matchup was, right, I think you thought you could block it off long enough before applying enough kind of mortals to then win the game afterwards.
Yeah. Basically.
Okay.
Yeah. The thing my list, I think, would have been concerned about when what I ended up playing in game four would, spoilers, it was the Nagash Infinite Ghoul thing. It's hard to clear lots of wounds. Like, I'm not sure. It's not because the army DPS, but it's like having big blocks of ghouls, like doing three mortal wounds to like lots of elite units is what my army wants to do, rather than doing three mortal wounds, which they're all going to come back to the ghoul, infinite ghoul thing.
Okay.
You struggle killing the characters as well because they've got free heals in the hero phase, and obviously,
exactly.
Nagash can probably stop maybe 50% of your output, and it's rare that you're going to get all the spells onto the Arc Revenant, etc. Is it?
I think those are the only.
In your defense, it is designed to take out Seraphon. So.
completely, and it did, yeah.
and Mike's as well, didn't it, in the last game?
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, and then your final one for day one, your game three.
Well, that was our illustrious co-host, Mr. The Owen Jackson, was my game three. And we had a blinder of a game, I think Owen will attest
to. Yeah, I've heard this one. Yeah, it was tight. Yeah.
I don't know if it was the jet lag or if I was just, you know, if I was lulled into a false sense of security by the dreamy eyes.
Did he distract you with the socks?
Yeah. Exactly. He did. He kept putting his leg up on the table and, you know, what's a man to do, right?
What socks were you wearing? But can you remember?
I think they might be. They haven't had an outing yet. No, they were white Carhartt socks with a red and black stripe.
Of course, they were Carhartt.
Ooh, the sexy stripe.
I would say it wasn't my dreamy eyes or your jet lag, Matt. It was that I actually, for the most part, I think I played a pretty good game of Warhammer. And that's
you played a sensational game of Warhammer. You did.
Okay. Going into it, Matt, for you. This was another kind of medium one, was it, in your head?
It is. But I always take note of the player whenever I do a matchup. I always put a lot of stock into who I'm playing as well.
Okay.
It's important. I think it's important to sort of like I mean, once, you know, once you've sort of been around the block a few times, and I'm sure Darren and Owen will attest to this, you know, you play the top players a few times, and you sort of get to know people a bit. And if I'm coming up against someone who I think is like a top player, then mm-hmm. I'll be more concerned for sure, because, you know, I know that Owen's gonna manipulate every little minutiae of the game to, you know, as I would as well, to you know, to bring home the win. Whereas, you know, like maybe a less seasoned tournament veteran like wouldn't, that's all. But yeah.
And so, and Owen was playing Khorne. I don't think we mentioned that, but that was the Khorne. So for you in that specific matchup, if it wasn't Owen, if it was just Khorne and a player you didn't know, what would you have had Khorne's, that down as?
It's like a, yeah, it's still a medium, but it's like a not a great medium. I think it's definitely more of 50-50. Because the Spellignore, so it's all about the Spellignore, really. The Spellignore that Khorne gets, it's not just like a Spellignore. Like, I can, with this Fire Slayers one, even though it's a worse Spellignore, a 5-up initially, you know, with the Fire Slayers one, I can just bin as many spells in, you know, I can throw mind bullets at them all day and see what sticks. You know, with the Khorne one, I'm like, well, if he passes it, I give him a blood tithe. And the more blood tithe he gets, the more he's going to summon. And then I start to get into the feck problem of like, oh, I'm, you know, I've got to, he's bringing more stuff on, and I don't want him to do that, because that's my thing. I'm trying to, you know, like, get rid of as much stuff as possible. And, you know, because I'll lose stuff during the game.
Yeah.
And if he's then bringing, and when I lose stuff, it powers him up even more. You know, so it's if I'm feeding him chaff, it's just giving him blood tithe to summon on more stuff. So it's kind of like an even stalemate in that regard.
It sounds like the first two games went fairly similarly, where you were kind of blocking him off and then mortal wounds. Did you then think you'd have to change anything for your game with Owen then? Did you actively change your game plan?
Well, Owen won the roll-off, and I had a plan to go first, so then Owen surprised me by taking the first turn, which is pretty cheeky of him. But I did think, I did decide in the end, because Owen did that, to play the game in, I think, a similar way. I think in hindsight, I should have maybe been more aggressive early on.
Okay.
But just to get stuck in, because basically Owen took first, pushed out all his flesh hounds, his chaff, and, you know, Owen decided to play the board early, which is, I think, a good decision. And he used the threat of violence of his bloodthirsters to sort of like keep me, you know, keep me pinned in.
He's been using the threat of violence or podcasts, so that feels appropriate. That was unexpected, was it, for you? You said you thought it was a bit cheeky.
I was expecting to go first, because I think any Khorne player, if I was playing Khorne, I'd be like, well, I want the double. You know, if I'm going to go in and then I have the chance of going again with Khorne, that's pretty like devastating. Those bloodthirsters both swinging twice in a row, especially with all the no wards, fight first, all this, you know, that'd be pretty good. So that was why. And maybe Owen can enlighten you as to why he.
We will get to the lovely Owen when we get to him. So for this one, for people listening, why isn't this a red then? If there's lots of the Spellignore, you can do all the damage and bring stuff back.
So it's not a red because it's made of paper is the thing. I know they have the wards and all that. But there's ways I can get around that. I can push stuff up. I can deep strike. I can summon within seven, which, you know, turns off the ward straight away. So that's kind of not a problem. And the Spellignore, I know Owen's not going to use his blood tithe to boost the Spellignore, because he wants to use it to summon stuff and do murder lust and like fight and do the stuff that's going to get him through the chaff.
Yeah.
So I know I do. I already going in know what Owen's going to use the blood tithe for, so I can sort of plan around that a bit. Okay.
And so did you find yourself with that thought kind of restricting? Were you casting fewer spells than you normally would then?
No, but I was casting. So like, for example, when I did like a maelstrom, a malevolent maelstrom, I wouldn't hit everything because I wouldn't want to roll. You know, I purposely like put it away. So I'd only try and target the units of the maelstrom rather than like, you know, getting Owen to roll five up on everything. Yep. Get loads of Bloodthive. And also, once Owen does commit those Bloodthirsters, they're dead. Like, they go in, they blow something up, and then I take them off, like, straight away. Because they just, you know, then...
Yep.
They're just, what, 16 wounds? They're still 4-up save, aren't they?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, so it's almost like a waiting game for you, and it can go rough because of the summoning, but
yeah,
for you it's that kind of toss up again. A bit Fire Slayers ish, do you think? Or no? You think it's a worse one?
I think it's worse just because of the fact that the spell ignores in Bloodtide. Also, this was a mission with three objectives, if I
four.
Remember.
We
Omen,
played
right?
GM.
Four. Oh, it's the pulse.
Yeah, we played the pulse.
The pulse.
The pulse. Which is an interesting one. And also, Owen had Bellicor. How could I forget? He had Bellicor, which is like
Bellicor. I think you'll find. Yeah.
I mean, what's he going to Bellicor? It's obvious, right?
Yeah. The skinks.
It's Croak.
Right? Oh, right. Yeah, Croak. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, and he did do that. Luckily, Owen, I think he rolled the dice about 10 times. It kept being cocked, but it was like Croak was able to cast spells. So. But, you know, if he hadn't, that could have kept me pinned in even more. Could have won you the game, Owen. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, let's find out. Owen, let's do your day one, shall we?
Yes. If I may, I'm going to just step back a tiny bit, as I like to do. And Matt touched on a lot of things there, which would... Because I did a couple of notes. I never really prepped that much. But I just thought that if we talk about how you assess matchups, because it's all very well... Lots of, you know, we play a lot of Warhammer between the four of us. It's all very well us going, oh, this is a light green and this is a dark red and this is a orange, blah, blah, blah. But I think that to get to that level of knowledge, then we play a hell of a lot and we think about it a lot and we, you know, learn a lot. So I would say anybody listening that's like, if you want to get better at understanding what your good and bad matchups are, then just like tune into like Rob Honest Wargamer's stat show every week. You see what all the top lists are. And if you don't know how something works, then just screen grab that list and then go on Wahapedia and figure it all out and, you know, ask your mates and stuff. So coming from a position of strength and knowledge, that will allow you to then, you know, assess and analyze whether they're good or bad matchups. So I would say definitely that. And then like Matt and Darren and well, all of us, you know, we can look at a list and say, for example, somebody puts a list in front of you and goes, right, you're playing that in 10 minutes time. We could probably go through that and figure out what the key, like Matt was saying, kill the Terrorgeist first. You know, we would come up with a kill list. We would know, do I want to be within 30 or out of 30 to give myself a chance of unbinding a key spell? Do I want to be passive? Do I want to try and pin? Like your whole deployment, all the things that we've talked about through the first season of this podcast, all of that coalesces into like just a few important decision points. And then that becomes your whole strategy. And that's how you know, getting to that point is how you understand whether what is a green or a red. And then factoring into that as well, I would say that there are what I put down as like six variables, and Matt touched on them as well. So you've got the army, you've got the list, you've got the battle plan, you've got the player, then you've got the pack, and you've got the terrain. So, for example, I would always say those are the six factors because, you know, talking to like Runa and like the world's players and stuff like that, you kind of go, this is a green on this. No, sorry. Let's say this is a red matchup on this. It's really terrible. You know, they just come forward and take all my stuff off. But if we play this mission, they don't get to do that because of the conditions of that mission. So, you know, knowing the battle plan or the mission and how that factors into whether it's a good or bad matchup, I think is super important. And then, yeah, player strength, you know, even like people say, oh, like I played round one, we'll get to it in a sec, but I played Nagash Infinite Ghouls. But that's the headline. And then when you read the list and you ask him, what have you got in your box to summon, mate? And it's not two units of 20 Beast Flayers. It's a Vargolf Courtier and some ghouls and like three horrors. And you're like, okay, well, you know, like you start on the pinnacle and it's like bright red and then it goes a little bit of a lighter shade because they don't. Like when Stanesh first came out, the busted old Stanesh, who used to play that, by the way, Matt. Anyway, moving on. So
look, I only played it after the first nerf, okay?
Cool, okay.
Mainly because I was painting it.
Hey, you know, in school, like where you chase around and try and like have little toy fights with the girl that you fancy because you really care about them. That's all this is, okay, Matt. It's just another form of tough love, okay? Is that all right?
Oh, that's okay. It's a lovely moment. Anyway, back to killing stuff, Owen.
Back to killing stuff. So, yeah. Army, list, battle plan, the strength of the player. But again, don't let them get in your head like Darren. If you face, you know, like Darren says, you know, don't be overawed or make it a bright red just because you've heard of Jack Armstrong or Dan Bradshaw or Darren Watson or, you know, Matt G or, you know, Math Mallow, any of these
or
players.
Alex Q. Yeah, exactly.
Alex
yeah.
Q, sorry, sorry, Al. Yeah.
Alex Q scares me the most.
Yeah, man, that guy. yeah, so, and then like, The terrain and the pack, you know, the terrain at the weekend had a massive bearing on my play style, and I used it to the best of my ability. So,
same, yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to get all that out of there. Also,
very good.
Yeah, no, that's great. Honestly, yeah.
Also, like Matt, you know, I know I'm ribbing you for playing good armies, but if you want to win tech games of Warhammer, then you play good armies. That's that simple.
You got to play the good stuff.
Exactly. And so Matt's analysis, like Matt will have a lot more greens than if you're taking, you know, an army that you love, but maybe isn't like top, top tier. So, you know, understanding that, okay, shit, I've got loads of red matchups here. That's fine. So try and get the best out of each gate. Like it's not bad that you turn up to a tournament and you're like, oh, I don't want to face that. And that sounds horrible and bloody Quan Spine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay, that's my TED talk over.
That was lovely TED talk, Owen. Thank you very much.
I've got my own coming, Owen. Don't worry.
I thought that was going to come. Yeah,
brilliant. This is good. This is why we do this, right? You know, I love learning.
I'm just here for the aliens, but after that, this is just the cherry on the cake. So please,
okay,
please.
So yeah, round one we played No Risk Without Reward. My opponent was a lovely chap called Reese, who I'd never played before, and this was Nagash Infinite Ghouls. So again, another tip, round one, often you get it in advance and then you catastrophize about how your opponent's going to play amazingly and deploy perfectly and everything's going to be perfect. And then within 5 minutes, you realize that they're not doing that and everything's okay. So for me,
I like to play my first game in my sleep, you know, sometimes the night before.
Hey, I had a 3-hour fever dream about a certain army this morning and I woke up and I've completely changed what I'm going to take to Blackout now just based off a dream.
Wow.
Just a dream and a lovely plan on how to kill a Slan turn one.
Do you know if it was the alien speaking to you? Do you think it was that?
Hold on. Yeah, it could be.
Some cosmic insights. Yeah,
indeed. Exactly. It was No Risk Without Reward, which is basically, you know, you can deploy straight into combat. So I was like, okay, well, you know, if he puts it on the line, then I can just tag him in. I knew that he outdropped me, so he had the choice. So going in, I was like, respect his ranges. So this is a key thing. You place Nagash. If you don't want a key thing taken off, you just stay outside of 21 because that's portal plus Hand of Dust. So early game, you know, that's a key thing. So that, you know, that's part of the matchup. I'm like, shit, you know, don't give him too much. But similarly, you know, respect that perhaps with your key piece, especially as I've got a hero phase move and I can get in. So for me, factoring in the player and the list and the fact that it wasn't that, and I knew for a fact that he normally plays Fire Slayers because I do my research. So I knew it was a new army for him. So I was kind of going in with it being an orange and being like, I know my army well. I've got turn off wards so I can switch off the 5-up from Nagash. My army rinses ghouls. And the one thing that I think is against that list is if you make them, force them to spend lots of CP. It's a very CP heavy army, that Nagash Ghouls army I found. So I was like, if he takes first, I'll just make it so that all my combat stuff is relevant, and then I can push in and then clear off most of the ghouls. And if that's the case, then if I win turn two prio, I've got a good shot at taking, you know, the king's head off in that. And that was how the game went, basically.
Mm-hmm. So as you said, normally looking at that, just looking at the game matchup and looking at the kind of list as it in isolation, almost you would have thought it was a kind of, as you said, a bright red,
yeah,
because of the magic or the bodies, or what's the main thing about that that scares you as a Khorne player?
As a Khorne player, if he's got an Arcs Regent and a Ghoul King on foot, then you know you're going to have 30 bodies popping up behind you perhaps, or on a flank, and then starting the game with, you know, 60 to 70 ghouls. Khorne, the way that I play it, tends to be a kind of tag board control zone with a counter punchy kind of element, with a couple of bits of decent combat, and then I use my summons and stuff to fill. So the Nagash list is difficult because I need both Bloodthirsters to go in together to line that up to basically kill Nagash. So I have to clear the screens, and you know, it's very easy, played really, really well. You can just get swamped, much like how Matt described his game. I mean, for context, my opponent, I think went 1-4, or maybe a draw and four. And then Richie, who had another version of the same list, Nagash Ghouls as the headline, he went 5-0. So, you know, there's things in that matchup that, are tough, basically.
Okay.
Because he can pin you off, and the battle tactics are difficult for Khorne. So if my opponent pins me in, then I've got to go for kill stuff, and that's not as reliable as more movement based battle tactics.
Yeah.
And he can shut down magical dominance, which I like to do with Bellicor, blah, 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 blah. So yeah. And then round two, I played Sam, and this was on Spring the Trap, and he was playing, it was a very different challenge. So this was Beasts of Chaos, Bellicor with the nine Bulgor list. Which again I would say is an orange, because you know they've got really easy battle tactics. I have to kill all of their battle line to get my grand strat, and I have to keep one of mine alive. And they can be all over the board. And the objectives on this are, they're two very wide ones and one in the center. So I thought that he would just play the sides and then deliver his Bulgor wherever he wanted to just blow something up. And then he had his own Bellicor, which is also another problem for me. So, yeah, that was really tricky. Thinking about that, I knew that my condition there was basically push my screens out as far as I could so that he hasn't got good targets for when he brings his Bulgor down. Try and win turn two priority so that he has to bring his Bulgor down and I get to see them before I have my turn two.
Yep.
And then get into the mid game and crush whichever flank the Bulgor aren't on and try and control them on the other flank and blow up his Herdstone. So that's the path to victory I saw, and that is exactly how it played out, much to my...
Okay. And so you thought before that was kind of, again, an orange, did you say? Sorry.
Yeah, it felt like an orange just because he could get his battle tactics very with relative ease without me being able to interact or shut them down. I knew that it would be like a 13-7, 14-6 at best, just based on all the tools that he had. Okay. Yeah.
But confident in the win in that one before you started?
No, not confident in the win. Just because the Bulgor are like, the delivery mechanism is crazy. But I've played it a couple of times at Worlds now, so I knew that if I screened out my first screens and then my second screens would be like 11 or 12 back without giving up too much board. And I also knew that I would have to go down on the primary early to not spread too wide and get picked off. So I knew it would be a late game win, but that was the best game of Warhammer I've played in a little while. So I ended up, I think it was a 23-17. So I was really happy with that.
Good.
And then Matt, which is...
And then the punch up, yeah?
Yeah, the table one punch up.
So I mean, said that he thought this was going to be the easiest green of all time when we just spoke to him about 5 minutes ago. In all seriousness, what did you think going in?
Well, there is a psychological element to this for me as well, because
of course, yeah,
I really hate Seraphon. like I fucking hate Seraphon, and like I don't hate the players in any way. I just think they've always been cooked, and they continue to be cooked. And it just, and this is on.
Oh yeah, baby.
They just grind my gears because they've got, they just got so many tools. So yeah, I actually had a game the previous week at the London Open against Mo Ashraf. Shout out to Mo, my teammate.
Yeah,
and I won't go into it too much, but I let the army and the dice and other things trigger the fuck out of me. And I ended up being a really bad opponent. And I was a bit embarrassed about that. So I came in with a much more philosophical approach, and I knew that it was a red. It was like a dark orange. I knew that basically I needed to win some prios, play really well, be aggressive, be much more aggressive than is my natural game. Because I,
Colin told me when I came over that you summoned your inner Darren Watson.
I did, yeah. I wanted to basically not. I wanted, because Matt knows me well. Like, we've played a lot of times, right, man? Like, we've played maybe 50 games, maybe not that many. A lot of games. We played
a lot of games, though. Yeah, yeah.
And like, we always have absolute humdingers, and he knows that I play quite reserved and passive and counterpunchy.
Yep.
So my, you know, going into the matchup, I was like, this is a red or a dark orange. He can just, like he says, my stuff is paper. People put too much emphasis on that 5-up spell ignore. They're like, oh, corn, 5-up spell ignore. They'll be fine into Seraphon. But it's like, you're stopping 1 in 3, maybe. And like the rest of the time,
you're stopping a third of one type of output.
Yeah, precisely. And like they do, and the cleanse the realm node blast. That's not a magical attack. Much like Matt says, with the stave setup, you can turn off my ward. So because you're within 7 rather than 9, so you're within 8. So you can. So there's lots of things that make it tough. So I was like, I'm going to not play how he thinks I'm going to play. I think that benefits the mission. And I'm just going to push it in and see and like tag and hold. And I think that, it was a resource management game, and I wanted to make Matt not use his resources in the way that he wanted to. Mm-hmm. So for example, to get his turn one battle tactic, he had to summon 10 skinks, whereas you'd have much preferred to be banking them and going for like a big node blast turn one, turn two in conjunction with some other summoning and things. So I kind of wanted to, take the red and use it against you and play differently and make you sweat. And it almost worked. I mean, I got my boom thruster right in the heart of the castle.
I did, and I made a big mistake by I dropped a Basti down probably earlier than I should have as well, and Owen managed to pretty much lift it for free, I think.
Yeah. So the boom thruster went in with an additional pip of rend and an extra pip of save, and I believe he had bless on him as well. And yeah, all I was doing, like, if I'd have casino diced that and got 3 sixes, I'd have just won the game immediately on turn two. But it didn't happen. But I put myself into a position to win. So
well, and as sure as Darren attests, you played for your outs. It sounds like.
Exactly,
That's why I said to Darren, you know, I wanted to summon my inner Darren, because, you know, listening to this podcast and learning from other players, sometimes it's good to do something that your opponent's not expecting.
You'll win more tournaments doing playing like that. No, don't try and lose well. Fuck that.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You're in a red matchup. Fucking get involved. Like,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's exactly right, Darren. Never try and.
Well, like, who cares if you go, like, if you go 4-1, like Owen, you're proud that you tried to go for the 5-0, right?
Definitely.
So you can. So the 4-1 doesn't feel so bad, does it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, unless it's teams and you're trying to get as many points for the team, then just fucking go for it. You know, like, doesn't matter.
Yeah,
and it's just boy soldiers.
Yeah. Oh no, it does matter. That's disingenuous, Matthew. It does matter, but you need to play to, if you're aiming for like podiums, then you've sometimes you find yourself in a shit matchup. You find yourself in a shit situation, just slowly dying so that, you know, you get a 13-7. Fuck that. I would prefer to, like, just make one big, massive play or, you know, or several, like, 5% shots at taking out the game. Sometimes they fucking happen, you know, and then you feel like, God.
Yeah. So just before we go to Darren, Owen, do you think that assessing the fact that you went into that red and had such a good game, do you think that's going to change how you approach these sort of red matchups for you in the future then?
Yeah, I think so. I think being a little bit more hard-nosed and like going for the out, no matter how, you know, how outlandish it is. Yeah. Like everything was based around a turn two play, and then understanding that even if that didn't come off, then I probably had the board position to still get really close and maybe eke out the win. And it was 25. It was a 1-point win to you on turn five on Grand Strat, wasn't it, Matt? But yeah, I think definitely knowing the matchup, knowing what the condition was, and that one little in that I had, and then having the confidence to then have a go for it. I think it's great. I mean, like the other day I played, and I won't go on too much, but the other day I played and I was like, I'm going to see what I do if I put these two units into those six Immortus Guard and I roar off the defense and we go all in and I've got all the buffs. And it was a terrible idea, but at least I did it and found out.
Nothing fucking kills them.
No. I could have told you that one.
But yeah, assessing the matchup and then pinpointing that little one moment in time and then fucking going for it. It feels great. It feels like, you know, trying to dribble around the whole of the, you know, the defense and then smash it into the top corner. Like 99 times out of 100, you fuck it. But if it comes off, then you feel amazing. So,
and you're going to shout football at the top of your lungs, eh? Yeah.
And I still felt good at the end of the game because I tried it and it almost worked. And I played my mate and we had a really good game and I made him sweat.
You did.
Sweat his bollocks off. So it was like...
You did win all those fucking priors, though.
Well, you know.
Right, Darren. Matchups.
Yeah. I would like to start with my own little TED Talk.
Please.
Just really getting back to basics, okay? So to my mind, if for you to be able to understand like a really good, what you know, a good matchup, a bad matchup, etc., you have to understand what your army, how your army wins. And I think basically there are like five paths to victory. And I do a lot of work with my patrons on this. Certainly for people that are like, well, you've got some experience with this, Alex, you know, feeling a bit overwhelmed when it comes to sort of list writing. And when you get down to sort of like the brass tacks of it, like an army wants this, I think there are five core ways an army achieves victory. And that can be primary power. So armies that want to sit on those circles, you know, a good example of that would be the Nagash Infinite Ghoul list. You know, it just wants to, those lists wants to ideally go early, take all the points and just stay there as long as possible. Gargants have got really good capture weight as well. So it's not necessarily horde armies. It's just armies that can stay on the circles pretty long. And that's their route to victory. They're not gonna worry too much if they drop a battle tactic or two, because they're gonna outscore you on the primary. You've then got strategic power. So those lists that are built to do five battle tactics and get a grand strategy. And we've got several examples of factions that are really good at this now. Sylvaneth are fantastic at it. Daughters of Cain are unreal. They're fucking stupid. Tzeentch, with their grand strategy that they get for free, is amazing. Fire Slayers are also quite a strategic army. And those factions, you can go very confidently in a game. Like Ossiarch Bone Reapers as well do battle tactics really well. But you can think to yourself, wow, this is 1-2 more. I'm getting 13 points at the end of this, regardless of what else goes on, regardless of the circles that I sort of stand on.
Mm-hmm.
So that can help you when you figure out your battle plan. You think to yourself, I don't have to spread out and cover the whole board. I only need to fight over sort of half the board and interrupt my opponent a couple of times. Maybe get their
grand 13, you mean, as in five battle tactics and your grand strat. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've got control power. So lists that are designed to interrupt their opponent. Khorne's a great example of this. You know, Bellacor, he's very useful to interrupt a battle tactic. I'm sure Owen will attest to this. I've heard that word several times from Matt, so I was determined to use it. you know, so builds that are designed to sort of interrupt their opponent. And then they're very difficult to use, I would suggest. we've then got pure power. So armies that just fuck. A KO from last season, for example, designed mm-hmm. to just actually wipe everyone off the board. They can't stand on circles if they're dead, and they can't kill me if they're dead, you know.
Yep.
And that sounds, you know, and the sort of Seraphon builds that Matt and sort of other prominent Seraphon players
are. Oh, it's my overriding philosophy, Darren. That one.
Well, no, it's been mine a lot of the time as well. Like mm-hmm. it's very simple Warhammer. They can do fuck all if they're dead, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then
the fifth one, what have we got? Primary power, sorry, control, strategic. Oh, surgical. So surgical builds as well. So this is also sort of Seraphon. Any army that's designed to surgically remove your opponent's key pieces. Seraphon are very good at this, obviously, because they've got so many ranged attacks that bypass the sort of shooting. And again, this is very simple Warhammer. Your opponent's troops die quicker if their commanders are dead, and they do less damage if their commanders are dead. You know, and if you can find any factions that does one of those primary routes to sort of victory, does multiple of them, then you're in a good spot, which is why Seraphon, I think, do very well at the moment. Mm-hmm. They've got fantastic surgical power. They've got amazing fucking kill you power, and also their summoning can help them sort of stand on circles.
They've got some good tactics too.
Yeah. They're not the best. I wouldn't put them in, like, they're not sort of Sylvan F or a Daughters of Cain sort of stuff.
No. But they're still like, there's like, I think three, like I was doing every game.
Yeah. They're not shit. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. They're not shit.
It's almost like they're too good, isn't it, Darren?
I think they're I was waiting for Owen to come in, yeah.
Well, I've not used them this season for a reason. You know, I want to actually, yeah. This season, I'm really trying to build up my, if I do go to Worlds next year, I want to make sure that I'm the best player I can be. So I don't want to rely on lists. So I'm moving away from using very powerful lists and using some silly ones. Not silly ones, but ones that are designed to teach me stuff. Anyway, I learned quite a few lessons at Feud, actually, running the Gotrek build that I ran. Okay. But I'll get into that in a moment. So once you understand what your list is trying to do, when I first took the Nagash and Fek Ghouls, I was like, right, I'm going to a team event. I want to be the guy that stands on circles for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. And Infinite Ghouls sort of ticked that box, you know, very, yep. very well.
Yep.
And if you're standing on circles very well, then you can then sort of go down the list of how other people's armies are going to be trying to win. And you can have a good idea of what you're good into and what you're bad at, you know, on a very sort of basic level. So that if you turn up and you're talking to your opponent and you don't quite understand what they're using, you've never played it before, when they're going through their list, you can be thinking to yourself, well, what are they actually trying to achieve? And then if you've already sort of given it some thought before the game, you know, what you're good into, what you're not, you'll have a better understanding of the matchup on the spot, if that makes sense. It's very easy to go through if a matchup was good or not after the fact. It's very difficult to arrive at the table, the situation you're in, and be able to instantly sort of assess it unless you've got some experience. So if you don't have any experience, I'd recommend you sort of go through this. When you're designing your lists, really think about how you're trying to achieve victory, and then put some thought into these other four ways that people can achieve victory, and then how you sort of relate to those. For an example, if you're standing on circles, then if you come up against an army that is designed to just blow you out the water, then you can sometimes that's very good for you because it's a DPS check, right? They might not have enough damage to take you off those circles. Infinite Ghouls, I played KO at the Warhammer World one, and it was the old stuff before the new JHB, and I rightly predicted that my stuff was going to be able to survive like several turns of KO shooting at me. whereas if you're a strategic army, you know, that can be quite a challenge into an army that's just going to stand on circles, because you're going to struggle. If you don't have the damage in your list, you're going to struggle taking them off. So then you've got to try and win by other means. So if I was Sylvaneth going up against that Fek army, for example, I would know straight away they've got far superior primary power to me. So there's absolutely no point me trying to fight over all the board, but there's absolutely a lot of, I know that they're not very good at getting battle tactics. I know that from experience as well. So their strategic power is bad, whereas mine's good. So I'm going to play into that. I'm going to play over maybe 50, 60% of the board in the early game. I'm going to make sure I get all my battle tactics throughout the game. And then I'm actually going to start retreating, like, and just surrender some of the board to them, but keep a real eye on how many points I need to close out the game. So I know going into that matchup that I need to go up early. And if I get that opportunity, I'm going to take it. Okay. So that's like, do you go first or second in that situation? I would be going first because I'd be trying to get one, two more, because I know that later on in the game, my game plan is to like sort of retreat back. I'm going to get less and less primary. And I can come up with that battle plan on the spot because I know that strategic is bad into standing on circles, primary power.
What would you say, Darren? Just a quick question then. What would you say your Sylvaneth list from Feud, what would you say it was good at, and what were its bad matchups then? Just taking into account the sort of the different types of armies that you've just described.
So it was purely built to be a strategic army. So I wanted it to be able to do the battle tactics very well. And I took Gotrek, like, because I love Gotrek. Originally, I was going to take Nagash Fek, but there was quite a... The more and more people I spoke to, there was a time when people enjoyed lists that I wrote that took advantage of old rules, but that ship seems to have passed now. I'm on the England team. So it seemed to upset a few people. So I thought, right, I'm not going to take that horrible monstrosity. And I appreciate it is fucking horrible. So I thought, right, it's a new GHB. I'm going to celebrate by taking my favorite character, which is Gotrek. But I did want to marry him with an army that would support him. And the basic idea, Owen, was to have Gotrek run him into the middle and then have the entire Sylvaneth army fight over like 50% of the board, you know, one flank or the other. And that was a very, very basic battle plan that I could adapt. Sometimes I would run, if I was fighting a melee heavy army, I would run a Tree Lord behind Gotrek, because then you've got that monstrous action that makes any unit that comes into them fight last. So that put people off charging Gotrek, because the thought of him hitting them before they got to hit him would often put people off. So it worked quite well. But the main premise of that whole list was to, I really concentrate every turn on getting my battle tactics and keeping my general alive, because I had what's it called, something savant, spell casting savant, the keep your wizard alive, keep your general that's a wizard alive as my battle tactic. And Sylvaneth, really, it's quite easy to keep your warsong alive because they're dead tanky and you can jump them around the table, can't you, with the trees. So I had a plan. If I was going up against other strategic armies, then I know that I've got to try and fight for the primary more. If I'm going up against armies that want to blow me off the table, and I actually think this GHB, and if you look at some of the lists other than Seraphon that are just obviously really, really strong, but I think we've moved away from armies that are just blowing people off the table. You know, KO isn't as prevalent, is it? So you don't need to worry about that so much. And obviously strategic armies need they need pieces on the board to be able to complete all their battle tactics. So you wouldn't think they'd be very good at armies that just blow you off. I'm going to say blow you off quite a few times now, aren't I?
That's what you said, blow me off about four times.
So you can, but then they're not as, I don't think they're as prevalent at the moment. So that's why I think strategic armies are quite good in this GHB, because it seems a bit slower. You've got opportunity. You don't necessarily have to engage so much to win games. I don't know how everyone else feels, but that's certainly how I feel. And I think Sylvaneth really play into that. So that was the decision and the very basics of it.
Okay.
And then, like I say, once you understand what you're trying to do, once you're more practiced at going, right, I'm going to write a list and it's going to be the best strategic list I can possibly write. Today I'm going to write the best stand on circles list, the best surgical list I can possibly write. That will help you, when you look at it from that perspective, that will help you be able to assess what your opponent's trying to do. And then if you've given some thought to it before, how you're going to interact with that, you should be able to come up with better plans on the spot. And after you've done this a little while, you'll get a lot more confidence from doing it. And that's how sometimes you can end up thinking to yourself, well, this is a red matchup, but actually I know exactly, I've got a plan into this and I'm reasonably confident.
do you like to write lists then that you're more concerned with what you're doing rather than
always
doing what they want to do?
I know, yes and no. I think it's paramount you understand what you're trying to do. Fundamentally, it is paramount you understand. And that's why netlisting is, I've got nothing wrong with netlisting. I've gone on record and said that several times. But, you know, one of the big failings of netlisting is if you don't fucking know what it's supposed to be doing, then it's very difficult to pick up a list and play it how the author sort of intended. And another thing is, So that's the very core of it, if that makes sense. And I know that's a bit that might be a bit basic, but
No. I think that makes perfect sense, because that's how you're approaching these kind of matches and how you're assessing them.
It's pack dependent as well. So one mistake I did make is I didn't really appreciate the pack. Sylvaneth aren't very good at winning big, and at feud on in at the Fens, was random pairings between winning. Which doesn't suit.
It was within bracket.
Yeah. Then. So it doesn't really suit. It doesn't really suit Sylvaneth, because they want to ease past their opponents. They want to win like 13-7 or 14-6. It's very hard to get a 20-0, I think, from Sylvaneth.
Yeah.
That means that normally, if you're playing the people that you're closest to, you end up playing the people, you avoid all the Seraphon thirsty arseholes because they've all got 20 nils.
Yeah.
So in this pack, I wasn't able to do that. And I think if I did realise that, I'd have probably put Gotrek and Seraphon.
Right, I see.
Yeah, it's pack dependent as well. There's so much fucking data out there before a tournament starts. Like, the more you look, the more you see.
Yeah. And more so with that in mind, just quickly assessing your day one, how did you kind of assess the first three games? Were they
reds? I was playing Danny Banks. I've got stats and ladders up, actually, so I'm not going to fuck up anyone's name. He's playing Lumineth, and his list was Eumetrica. So here is a combat heavy list that's got a couple of wizards in it, basically. But we're playing no risk, no reward. And I just, like, I was so excited to just plonk Gotrek down in the middle of the board, and fuck me, did it feel good. it wasn't necessarily the best thing to do, but it made me feel fucking great. And in this mission, because he's largely melee, and he's quite slow as well, the Eumetrica, like the Stone Guard, I think, are movement five. Movement four, okay.
Mm. Yeah, they're four, yeah, they're slow.
Yeah, they're four.
So I'm pretty confident in this, because I'm very confident I'm going to get my grand strategy. I'd be playing very poor, personally, I think I'd be playing very poor Warhammer if I lost my war song to this. So I was very confident. Yeah. I was coming away with my grand strategy. His grand strategy was Illyrith Aftershock, which is, I believe, have a Eumetrica unit on a contesting an object. Two of them contesting the objective at
two contesting okay. objective at the end of the game. Yeah.
Like Gotrek is running full pelt at these fuckers, so I'm killing some shit. He doesn't. Yeah. If I, as long as I can keep rolling threes, you know, for his ward save, then I'm doing okay. So this I think was a big green for me, and it
going back into your kind of assessment that you were talking about, because your list is a strategic one. In your list, so for your assessment of his then.
I think this one wants to stand on circles. So it's got very good capture weight and it's good at fighting when you're, it's like it pumps if you let it. So if you're in combat with it, but with like specifically with my list, I can strike and fade. So I can engage and then bug out of there, you know, and then I can keep Gotrek in there for 4 days. So I think this wants to stand on circles and I think this wants to fight. And I think, because I get to choose the combats that I want, and I've got Gotrek, I think I outfight him. Yeah. That's exactly what happened. So he wasn't able to stand on the circles as long as he needed to, and I think by turn four it was the game was pretty much over. So I went into this one very confident, and assessing it from that very basic fundamental level, I'm strategic. He wants to stand on circles, but I clear him off the circles quick enough that I can stop him. Yeah. So that's why it's green, because actually I think I'm going to end up standing on circles much better and I'm going to get all my points. In fact, I think I dropped a battle tactic in this mission because I killed everything by turn four and wasn't able to do one at the end. So,
oh, really? So you missed one because it was all – you couldn't do any – okay, interesting.
Just to flex on them.
No. I'm pointing out that's bad. I'm pointing out an error. Like I should have given my battle tactics more respect. I didn't actually map them out.
Well, especially with the pack then, right? Because if you're saying, I mean, what was the secondary?
That's just it. The secondary was how many bits and bobs you got. So I came eighth in this. Again, this is why it's not great for Sylvaneth, because they don't get 20 nils. They get, and you need to get all your battle tactics to get these bigger
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, well. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a great pack for Sylvaneth, but yeah, that was a green. My second game was against Owen Abram. Can you correct me, Matt? Can you correct me?
How did Abram?
Abram. He is gorgeous, isn't he? I played him, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And he's just as when I walked up to the table, I was like, "Oh, I'm in for a lovely game." He's a joy to play. He was playing Soulblight with Double Dragon and the Neferata, and then three units of I think zombies. And what was the second mission? It was the three.
Spring the trap.
Spring the trap. Yeah, like you said before, no one actually uses. I never used it. No one fucking used it. Yeah, pointless trap. So if you were looking on paper and you knew you were going up against Soulblight, you would think to yourself, oh, this is an army that's going to have massive primary power. But he actually opted for a really elite fucking smack you up list. Like he wants to get in there and like slap you about with these dragons and Neferata, make them both unrendable, you know, and then jump up and take the odd bits and bobs with the zombies are pissing about, aren't they? So when I went into this, I put Gotrek Central, and I knew that his grand strategy was have more grave sites at the end than me. So all I needed to do was have two grave sites. So I had that right from the get go. I was thinking, right, just hold two grave sites at the end of the game. And he can't get his grand strategy. So I'm going to be, that's a 6-point swing, because I'm pretty confident he's not going to get through Gotrek and all the trees to get my war song. So that's a 6-point. And that gives you a lot of confidence right at the beginning, because I'm like, as long as dice don't go fucking bonkers, I should be, and I concentrate on getting those two grave sites from the off, I'm going to be 6 points up. And then I want to, his army wants to fight in the middle, and my army with Gotrek wants to fight in the middle whilst the rest of my army is completing battle tactics and taking out the odd zombie unit if it gets the opportunity. And that's exactly what happened. I walked into the middle of the board with Gotrek and a tree. His first dragon came in with some support, and Gotrek ate it. And then... but there were other things as well. There was plenty of, because there's quite a bit of shooting from the tree lords, and they actually pretty good in melee themselves. I fucking love making things attack last, and then with the tree lords making it so they can't pile in. So then you move to the point where you take the least amount of damage, and then you make it so they can't pile in. It's fucking.
Can I ask you a question, Darren? How did you play around the no wards? Legion of Blood.
I wasn't scared of it. So his ward's brilliant. That no ward's fantastic, but he still only does one damage a turn. So I just put Gotrek next to a tree. So if you come into me, so that's what Owen tried to do. He turned off the ward. He came in. I made him attack last. Gotrek fucked him up. The tree fucked him up. And then he failed to kill Gotrek. And then I won the priority, and then I killed him.
I see.
So, like, I wasn't. Sometimes you can hear an ability, and you can go, "Oh, it turns off Gotrek's ward. Oh, not having the 3+ ward. Oh, he's fucked." Or no, he's still got. He only does one damage a turn. You can still Mystic Shield him. You can still all out defense him if he misses roar, obviously. But you can still best day ever. You've got options, and they still got to roll dice at it, right? And if you make it go last, then they get worse, don't they? And that's what happened. So I just wasn't too scared of it. Maybe I should have.
And then your final game?
Was against Mark Padden. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's Mark Padden playing Soulblight, right?
So he was playing Soulblight. Now, this is a classic army that wants to stand on circles. This was all... Mark Padden. It had Radakar the Beast with Hunter's Snare. So this chap counts as 12 on an objective. It's got Belladama with the thing that gives you extra ward save, the Vampire Lord. And then it had like 20 Direwolves that obviously turn into 30 because of Vycross. It had 30 Death Rattleskeletons, 10 Blood Knights, 20 Grave Guard. So looking at this list, I've got to be wary of the Blood Knights, but they don't want to be anywhere near Gotrek. And I've got to be wary of the Grave Guard. They're the bigger problem for Gotrek. And then the rest of it is all just chod, isn't it? And because we were playing Geometric Pulse. So in this match, it was important for me. I felt it was important to go. Did I go first? I think I got the choice. I wanted to go first, so that I'd have the 58-60% chance of choosing where the pulse would come in. And I wanted to concentrate on taking the board and then jump to the opposite side of where the pulse was coming on, so that in the late game it would land, well, sorry, in the mid game it would land on Gotrek, and then it would sort of end up being in a safe place. Mm-hmm. And Mark didn't want to commit, and that's exactly how it panned out. Mark didn't want to commit anything into Gotrek. He kept like, "Fuck, I can't put anything into that bastard." And I was like, "Yeah, it's great, isn't it?" he was standing in the middle, and he got desperate at the end, and he threw in 20 Grave Guard, and that Gotrek was left alive with one wound. And as you can imagine, that was a football moment. I was very pleased. But I, how do I assess this matchup? This is a really good stand on circles list. I wanted to, but because it was Radakar the Beast, it was the big one. It did mean that I could shoot him, which is, so that's where I, because he counts as 12, and I know that he's trying to stand on circles. That's his path to victory. Mm-hmm. So I took away the 12 capture point there straight off, because that's one model. He just needs a toe on, and he's counting as 12. So yeah, that's why that was such an important piece to take out, right? Whereas the rest of it, you can screen out, and you can Gotrek, and you can have a couple of trees, and then that's half the board sort of screened out.
You thought this was a kind of green going in then, or did you? Were you
No, not at all. I thought this was going to come down to, I thought this is a game I was really going to have to sort of edge out. His grand strategy was Empire of Corpses as well. So that is where they've got to bring back at least three units. So this entire game...
Yeah, it's the source, that one. Yeah.
So this entire game, I'm trying to deny his grand strat right from the off. So I engage him as least as possible. There were some times when my tree lords were in range to shoot stuff and I decided not to. You know, I didn't want to finish off some of these units. So I was quite happy for a direwolf unit to go down to two models and then not finish them off. Yes, they can do a heroic action to get D3 back. I'm aware of that. But they bring back the entire unit and get their grand strategy, then that's even worse for me. I just made a mistake right at the end. I didn't screen out the back, the last objective. I thought I was standing on the his gravesite that was over there enough. But of course, in their turn, because he went last in the last round five, they can stand within three, which I'd forgotten. And he brought up 10 skeletons to take that objective back off me. So I lost. I lost 2 points. Well, he gained 2 points on me, which would have cost me a couple of tournament points. But that's the only mistake I think I made in that game. My plan here was don't kill him, get all your strategic points, try and get the pulse to go where his army is so that it ends up where it's not.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened. And he spent the early turns moving away from Gotrek. And I was thinking, well, the pulse is going to go. He was moving his army to the left to avoid Gotrek and the pulse and towards the pulse, right? Which meant that it was going to end up away from him. So he ended up in a position where half his army was out of position, thanks to Gotrek.
The plan went really, really
really well into that, but no, certainly not a green, because he's got a lot of capture weight, and he wants to. Soulblight Gravelords do battle tactics for days, don't they? I think he just needed a couple of units of bats in his army.
yeah, those things are horrible. But anyway, great, thank you very much. Right, Matthew,
yes,
two, you're on the three zip,
riding high, heady, you know. I was, you know, in high as ear.
yeah, we are narrative on this podcast, exactly.
For those that don't know, I had, for my Seraphon Army, I had converted a temple ship and was using it as my troglodon. Yeah,
and it was
fantastic. So I was literally pushing around a temple ship on the table.
Yeah.
It is, I can only describe as the most fun I've had playing Warhammer. I converted all my endless spells as well. So like there's like a death laser coming out of it. That was my pendulum. You know, the maelstrom was like the orb on top. It was, yeah, it was good.
Sounds very 40k. Yeah.
It is.
Game four
was the wonderful Richie from Just Play and his Nagash Infinite Ghouls.
Oh, here we go. The big bad.
And much like Owen said earlier, Richie's a seasoned pro. He knows what he's doing. And he painted that list, I think, in 18 hours with a specific goal in mind, and it was to win this event. And he came damn close. He got the 5-0. Yeah. But it's a red on paper for a lot of reasons. Mainly Nagash.
What are the main, so from your end, what are the main things that you're worried about going in?
Well, what I'm worried about is that there's the infinite ghouls thing is like, it's a DPS check. And if I'm allowed to do my thing, I'm pretty sure I can pass a DPS check.
Yeah.
I'm not like, because I can summon the right summons and, like those, if you've ever played Raptodon Chargers, I can summon those and they absolutely shred ghouls. But the spanner in the works of Nagash is that I'm trying to play a magic dominance army, and then Nagash is maybe now in fact one of the best anti magics with those unlimited +3 unbinds.
Insane.
And so
yeah, it's gonna be. I can't.
People moaned when his scroll came out. He's fucking.
I know. I was like. I was shocked that people were moaning. It's an amazing scroll. I think in the game I was actually getting more celestial summoning points by unbinding his spells than I was from casting my own. So that really fucked with the Seraphon rhythm, because you want to be like getting the points on your turn so you can immediately use them, where I was having to like get the points on his turn
to use them in my next turn. It sort of like meant I can't really plan around anything. And
yeah.
Also, I think what was the mission? It was one with four objectives.
Powerful.
Yes. So, but only two of them are active at any one time. And with these giant fucking ghoul blobs, I was like, well, great. You know, all Richie has to do is like sit on two. And that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't. He also outdropped me, which meant he got the choice of like switching on the one, you know, the objectives that, you know, the ones that are powered on. So like a lot of the decisions about how the flow of the game was going to go were immediately decided by like the factors of like Richie can pick which objectives go on. He can play the magic game as good or better than me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really like my options are just like going out the window. So I have to play this. I had to play this weird sort of, yeah, get the unbind points to summon the Raptodon chargers to charge in to kill some ghouls, but then you're just going to bring them back. I just don't think I quite had the tools, especially into that 5-up ward as well that mm-hmm. Nagash puts out.
So made it very difficult match on paper. It did. Before going in.
Yeah. It did. And it wasn't even a close battle plan, so I couldn't do a big pin early. I tried to do a pin, but like, and hold him up as much as I could. But really, and Richie's smart. He didn't give me any shots at Nagash. And I don't have like the, I don't have really, yeah, like a big smash piece to go in and deal with Nagash. So I knew going into the game as well, I probably wasn't going to get the chance to get rid of Nagash. Yeah. And then he's got Hand of Dust as well. And it's a whole other, you know, dimension of him, you know, so a Bastiodon isn't very good if you can just suddenly remove it from the board.
Sure. And so thinking of that game being such a bad matchup, is there anything that you did in the game that you would try again if you were in that matchup again? Or is there anything you think you would do differently if you played the game again?
I did, if I played the game again, I think I'd take note of, I didn't really read his grand strat, to be honest. Because it was a mission where you had to commit your locuses or whatever they're called, meant that
points on the circles.
Yeah, it's called the points, which meant that Richie did actually leave his general exposed. So I think, and I did try to go for him in the last turn, but I didn't quite get the charge that I needed to get in and maybe deny his grand strat. And I think if I'd recognized a little bit earlier that like there was going to be a mission that he would have to commit his general, then I would have probably tried to fish for that denying the grand strat a bit earlier.
Just as a quick interject here, because I know Darren was talking about it a lot. That's one thing that I've found from everyone kindly writing about their plays and misplays. That seems to be another common one. Is lots of people either don't think about the grand strat or forget about it during the game or whatever. And obviously, it can be quite a big point swing. So I think that's quite a nice highlighting.
Think about it at deployment. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
You got to. How am I going to win this game?
Yeah.
I'm going to score more points than them.
Yeah. Okay, and so that was, yeah, so for you, but knowing that for the next one, you still think probably still are a red then? You think even knowing that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously, like, there's always, you know, like, I'd never played it before as well, the Nagash thing, the Ibnagul thing, so, like, you know, there's a lot of learning experience, and it's still a red, but there's always mistakes that you can exploit. And it's just like staying observant in the moment for those. I mean, obviously, you can't go into a game hoping that they'll make mistakes. But when they do, like 1,000%, you've got to capitalize on every mistake they make in those road matches to like spin them around. unfortunately, Richie didn't make. He rolled those four ups, brought those goals back. What can you do?
Although there is a fantastic video of you avoiding the dusty finger, though.
And that is in fact the first hand of dust I've ever passed. I don't think I've passed one ever. I think, yeah, I don't. Congrats, I try not to when I play Owen. Thank you. When I play Owen. I don't know, who knows, more ghouls apparently. But yeah, and then
you're saying when you play Owen,
when I play Owen, I just never give him the chance to hand of dust me. So
I mean, you always play with me with Techless, so you just auto unbind it, so you know.
Well, yeah, but that's the narrative, Owen, that's the narrative, right?
But okay. You playing busted armies, yeah.
And last game five.
Game five.
What have you forgotten?
Game five.
Played Russ.
Can you stand? I did play Russ. Yeah, I played Russ and his underguts.
Yeah.
So it was two iron blasters with the extra rend, and then you know some monster trucks and some Mournfang and a few little wizard lads. And it was much like the Feck game. It was a game where I went knowing in that, you know, I can pretty much take it all off straight away. And he's got a lot of scoring power, but he doesn't have a lot of like staying power.
Yeah.
I took off a cannon and like the Frost Lord pretty much straight away. And then, yeah, it was just two turns of me, you know, him hitting my screen. I killed all the stuff. And then I push out the castle, kill everything else.
Yeah. So as you very, very like the Feck one, then you're thinking this is going to try and come and kill me, but I think I can delay it long enough.
Whenever I look at a matchup, I go like, what phases do they play in? I always think about that. I think, and ogres pretty much, and this is, you know, normally they tend to play in like one phase, which is the combat phase, right, and the charge phase. Mm-hmm. With all their mortal wounds, but obviously Russ are the cannons here, so if anything, like this ogre list was like a little more threatening. But the changes to Lookout Sir actually were quite impactful in this game, because I was able to hide a lot of my key pieces just by standing them next to my lads. And then suddenly the cannons couldn't shoot anything. And I was playing Drakothian's Tail, so I was able to put all my monsters in the sky so they couldn't be shot. Yeah. And so the only thing he could really shoot was Croak. And then he's got bodyguards, so that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I try and think about like what like phases they play in, and whether I care if they're playing that phase better than me.
And so for this is a really big green then again, much like the Feck, you think?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember the last time I've been worried by playing ogres, unless it's like the five monster truck thing.
With all the blood vultures and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So overall, just looking back through the five, do you think any of the games you kind of got wrong with your assessment, or do you think your assessments were kind of close-ish for them, and actually it's just how the game played out?
Oh, well, hindsight's a hard thing, isn't it? Game one, I think I did what Owen said, and I panicked the night before. I was like, oh my God, because I hate playing Fire Slayers. The one army I'll never play. They're just stupid, ugly dwarves. And yeah, I hate them. I used to have a real like hump of like not being able to beat Fire Slayers when I was just starting out playing Age of Sigmar.
Oh, they were your bogey, me, were they? Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, fuck. So I'm always a bit like, oh, Fire Slayers, great. So I was a bit hard on myself on that one, I think, but then it went a lot better than expected. Mm-hmm. Especially like, you know, when you do the nightmare scenario in your head, and then you see them deploy and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. So it was one of those. Yeah, the Feck one went exactly as predicted. Yeah. The Owens one, I never know anymore because I love playing Owen. He always surprises me.
Yeah.
And it's great. That was more like a, I think I didn't even care about that one. I was just playing Owen. That was great.
Yeah.
Richie and the Ghouls. I don't know. I wanted to back myself. But I probably should have done a bit more research on the Nagash Ghouls thing. I was a bit in the dark on that one. So I think I would have liked it to have been closer than it was, but yeah, all good learning. And then yeah, the Russ was again exactly as predicted.
Yeah, great. Owen, day two.
Yes. So we played Power Flux, and I played into Zeench, Eternal Conflagration. This was run by Arthur, who I'd met at a previous tournament, a Scribes tournament, but we never played. So I didn't really know, you know, when you tick off those six things, I didn't really know how he played as a player. But he said at the start of the game that he played Khorne, and, you know, he felt that it was a reasonable matchup for him. And I thought, cool, well, I don't really play Khorne exactly how other people play it, I don't think. Maybe that's just my ego, I don't know, but whatever. So I actually thought I was okay into it. And I'd also played this exact mission against a very similar list at the London Open a couple of weeks ago. So I sort of took that learning in. So I kind of felt like it was a reasonable green. I kind of knew that I felt like he would give me first control where the two objectives switched on. And then I could just essentially go for, because I, you know, as Darren said earlier, Zeench can play passively and still get a lot of points. So I felt like, okay, well, I'm going to need to score the primary on this, and I'm going to have to go for like a really big pin and then just feed him the stuff that I want him to kill. So like keep feeding him, keep chipping away at him. And then he essentially had a Lord of Change, a couple of small casters, and then two big units of six flamers, an Exalted Flamer, some Kyrick Acolytes. Basically, he didn't have a tar pit screen for me to hit, so I knew that I could get to the meat relatively quickly. And the way it worked out, I essentially just put Bronzed Flesh onto three Blood Crushers, moved them up the board, 3d6 charged them using the Unfettered Fury's ability, and they then killed the screen and basically sat there going, you're going to need to kill me to, you know, to get out onto the board. That's right. He had a Gaunt Summoner and he put his 12 flamers inside the Silver Tower. So I started the game thinking that he could like drop them down anywhere and was really worried about screening out that, because they're quite fast and they shoot quite far. You know, they shoot 18 and they move 9, I want to say. So from deployment, I knew I couldn't stop his Grand Strat. So I was three down and I needed to kill all the flamers and all the Kyricks to get my Grand Strat. So that was kind of one of my conditions. But yeah, and I knew he didn't have a monster to roar off all out defense. So, and he wouldn't be getting, you know, he wouldn't be stopping my all out defense on my Blood Crushers. So they have a 3-up save. I Bronze Fleshed them. I gave them a 2-up save. And even in Conflagration, he has only got one rend on all the flamers. And yeah, basically I felt like it was a good matchup if I just played the way that I wanted to play. So pushed the three Blood Crushers up, and then they tanked his whole army for two turns. And there was a psychological element in that with Blood Crushers, if you roll a one on Battle Shock, then one pops back up. Mm-hmm. So his first turn trying to kill them, and he killed one, and then I just rolled a one and brought it back. And then he got the double, and then he killed another one, and then he lost his head a little bit, and he charged his flamers into combat, which meant that they couldn't unleash hell when I came in on my turn two. And I dropped my battle tactic turn two, but I didn't mind because I basically killed everything in his army except for the Lord of Change and the two characters. And then it was kind of over. So yeah, that was a game where I knew that the targeted damage from a Tzeentch casting army is so much less than the targeted damage from a Seraphon Starborn magic army. Mm-hmm. So if I could get two Blood Tithe, then I could basically, you know, get my skulls up and I could do my thing, then I could shut down some key spells. You know, Primal Dice are more important in that matchup because he doesn't have as many pluses to cast. He just has the Lord of Change rig.
And it Destiny, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it all went my way. So he failed his battle tactic on the first two turns, which meant that I could overturn the Grand Strat. And then at the right time, I just pushed in all my monsters and cleaned up. So it went from a light green to a bright green because I had a bit of luck, and the turn one play that I concocted like worked better than I thought.
And just digging into that magic, because I think that's quite interesting, because you said it's not as much as the Seraphon. Is that because, considering they're both sort of magic dom armies, they're very good at being surgical and I would hazard a guess very good at blowing you off the table.
Yeah.
The difference between the two for you is purely the reduction of AoE, or it's they're less likely to get the spells off. What's the bit that changed it for you?
They just don't do as much as Seraphon. Like, they don't have the Cosmic Node Blast. They can't use their points to then create direct damage with Cleanse the Realms. They've got things like Bolt, which is D6. I think Tzeentch's Firestorm might actually, whatever. Obviously, he didn't have Kairos. He didn't have Kairos's War Scroll spell.
Yeah.
I just, it's not like he's doing Croak 3 or 4D3. Is it 3D3 to 4 times? Yeah, that's what it is. And Comet Call and the Realm Shaper and the Node Blast.
Okay. So it's the volume.
I also think just to jump in, is like that Seraphon can like play the combat phase and the shooting phase as well.
Yeah.
Whereas I guess as this was playing the shooting phase, but Tzeentch can't really play the combat phase. Like, they don't have the combat output.
Yeah.
No.
Whereas like,
and if you do, if you go mixed armsy, then you limit the power of the other phases. You kind of have to.
Yeah, you're taking away. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So for you, it was a green going in anyway, and then it got better.
I mean, he scored 1 point on turn one, 1 point on turn two, and then he got his Grand Strat, and I won 26-5. So it was a 20. It was a big win, and I didn't expect it to be that big, but I played on the idea that like board position and primary power was where I would have my strength over him, because I've got I've got two units of flesh hounds which give me unbinds, so they're both screening, capture, and magic denial, so perfect all into Tzeentch. I then had a pregame move to stop him like alphaing in with his flamers if he wanted to do that, and then I had the combat power with two bloodthirsters and Bellicor to a degree. I don't think I used Bellicor in that to stop a battle tactic on turn three because he won all the prios. I just knew that I had lots of tools against him, and then with a little bit of luck, and like I did the only spell he pushed through, and I didn't have two blood tithe to auto unbind it, and I just had a regular unbind and no primal dice left, and I just double six unbound it. So, you know, when you do that, you know, it's like, you know,
it's your. Okay.
Nice.
And the last one.
The last one was really tricky, and there's a lot of mirrors to how Darren described his game three, because I played into Soulblight. This was against a lovely guy called Peter I'd never met. And this was, again, three objectives. And I knew, and I was going, so this was 20 zombies, 10 dogs, two units of 10 dogs and a unit of zombies, and then two units of 20 graveguard, an ethereal zombie dragon, a Neferata, and a vampire lord on foot. So I knew that he had like a lot of primary scoring power, much more than me. But I knew that he sort of wanted to castle and then break out from that castle. So using the terrain and the impassable terrain, plus the speed of my flesh hounds and murder lust. I mean, it's a pure combat army. So you know, if you can run your dogs up or run your I thought you can run your stuff up, tag him in, and then use his screens against him. So like his two units of 20 Graveguard, they killed five dogs, one unit did, but off out of the way, and the other unit sort of like ground up against a minus one to hit Bloodthirster. I tagged the end of it. Basically, he would admit that his shapes of his units weren't great and they were susceptible to being tagged. So I just held him up, and then his one really, really scary piece that could just tear through my whole army, either his screens were in the way because they were being tagged and the terrain was holding him up and he wasn't going to be able to get into optimal positions. And then by the time he was then going to break out on turn three, I Bellicored it, and then he won prio, so the Bellicore carried over. And the Vampire Lord and Zombie Dragon did not charge for the whole game, basically.
Wow. Okay.
So
control.
Yeah, exactly. That's where, you know, I was looking at, you know, distributing my units correctly and basically holding him up and tagging him and trying to be up on the primary. So he failed one battle tactic in the early game and I was up on the primary because he sort of castled over two, but then I dominated the middle and used the impassable terrain to block him up with multiple screens. And yeah, that was the way that I wanted the game to go. And that was the way the game did end up unraveling. So I would say Soulblight in general is like an orange because he did the right thing. He went first and got on the points, but he didn't dominate the points. He just tagged them.
Right.
And then because he was scared about, you know, the Bloodthirsters coming in.
Sure.
Which, side note, you should not be scared about my Bloodthirsters coming in.
Yeah.
Because he wants his stuff to die to get his grand strat. So I
And
I foolishly, to keep the middle primary, killed a third unit. And then he did roll the three ups and the four ups that he needed on turn four and five to get it back. So it was kind of, I understood how I can stop him during the, you know, as the game unfolded and it went that way. And then Bellicore was used at the right time. So that was like a matchup where if he played how I thought he would, which he did, then I could keep him off the primary and then I can just turn off his best hammer at the right time to protect my stuff when I've pushed it in. So
but could go a different way, hence the orange.
Yeah, it could go a different way if he takes turn one and then I need to clear him off the objectives, because if I have to go in and clear all the dogs and the zombies off, I have to do that with my monsters.
Yeah.
And then the Graveguard, I can't Bellicore the two units of Graveguard and the dragon and Neferati
Time. So he should have stood on circles more.
Yeah, he should have stood on the circles deeper. He should have come closer.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of scalpel damage and a bit of burst, but he's got like wards and all sorts. So like the splash from the insensate thirst is not that important. If he'd have basically played the game 6 to 9 inches further up the board, I think he wins. Whereas I was able to, you know, hold him off. But if he doesn't take turn one, then I do that anyway. So he did the right thing in playing, going turn one, but, I didn't know him as a player. And he was like, said at the start of the game, like, oh, I'm doing really well. I'm 3-1. I don't play loads. Mm-hmm. So that kind of factored into maybe being a bit aggressive with my screens and feeling I could, you know, like put him under pressure and keep him off the points and maybe make him make some bad decisions. And I had Jack coming over to the table midway through my round because I was top of the 3-1s going into the last round. So I had a chance of getting third. But unfortunately, Soulblight, you don't get a big win against. So perhaps in retrospect, I should have been a bit more aggressive. The same thing happened to me that was happened to Darren. I literally stood on a gravesite with a Slaughter Priest and thought that would be enough. And then 10 zombies just popped up next to him and took the point, which was...
It's wholly within 12 of the grave, which is going to catch tons of people out.
Oh, man. The outside of three is crazy.
Yeah.
It's great that you can't do it on your opponent's turn now, but even so, that gave him...
It gives you so much control.
It gave him hold two and hold more. And it also meant that he could get his, allowed him to get his grand strat. So that would have been 5 points, which might have just got me third. But, you know, I was very happy with the weekend because the way that I thought my opponent's armies would play and the matchups kind of worked out exactly.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that same question I gave to Matt. Overall, do you think you assessed things correctly for the most part?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't like to self-congratulate myself too much, but I played some good Warhammer, and in the game that I knew was going to be a real tough one when I got the draw, then I gave myself a chance, like we talked about, into Matt. So
I had the pleasure of playing next to you, Owen, in the last round. That may be the happiest I've seen you at an event in that game. You
were, oh, really?
Yeah, you were loving it. Absolutely loving it. At one point, you were trying to get me to be more enthusiastic. I'll play that in a moment. But really good to see you enjoying yourself.
Well, going back again to the poor game that I gave my opponent at the London Open because I allowed the strength of his army and, you know, some poor play on my part and some dice and things to get to me. My aim for the weekend was 3-2 and to be sort of philosophical about the power of my opponent's army and try and find ways to beat it rather than moan about how good it was. So
that does nothing. That ruins your chances, doesn't it? Pissing them
exactly. Money. And it also, you know, I have no right to make my opponent feel bad about their army just because they're doing what their army does. So, you know, I thanks for saying that you thought that I had a good time, because I had a wicked time because it was a great event. I was positive and I did better than I wanted to do in terms of performance. So
all good things.
Big wins all around.
Whoop, good. Whoop, yeah. And you had great socks. Hang on. Day two socks. What were they?
I think it was just a plain black. One thing, actually, the socks got quite a workout because I stayed at the Holiday Inn, Premier Inn. Where's this going?
This sounds like a Darren story.
So I stayed and it was 45 minutes away from the venue. So I had a nice walk through the English countryside, both home on the Saturday night and to the event. Took some photos, had a little chat with my team captain Dan on the way.
Definitely sounds like an Owen story.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is not a Darren story.
I just had a lovely meander through the countryside and filled my lungs with, you know, fresh English air, and it was just all very bucolic and lovely, you know.
That is a lovely Owen story. There's no animal shagging or like people naked in the street or something. So
I'm sure that was all going on. It did seem like there were some dogging spots nearby, some seagulling and whatnot going on.
And a lovely pure black choice of socks as well.
Indeed.
I've got a dogging story, actually. I've got a dogging story. I'll tell you.
I bet you fucking have, Darren. Come on. we might have to
save that one. Darren, your day two.
Yeah, so my day two started off playing the eventual winner, Russell, and his daughter's Kane. And it was in Power Flux. Now, this isn't great for Sylvaneth. So straight off the bat, it's a red matchup and it's a red scenario, which is a nightmare situation to find yourself in. And the reason I would say it was a red scenario is because 50% of the board is territory, your territory, and then 50% is your opponent's territory. So there's limited places you can place your overgrown terrain. My list doesn't have Tree Lord Ancient, so I don't get a free tree as well. And that problem was compounded by the fact that Russell's list has got two deep striking units, Canaries, because he was playing Daughters of Cain, so he could really shut down my overgrown pieces terrain. So it really limits where I can place my pieces. Obviously, Sylvaneth really enjoy being all over the fucking board. And then it's a bad matchup in so much as everything in Russell's army pumps. So he had 15 combat snakes that could run and charge, so they can take out a Tree Lord in one hit with their 2+ do mortal wounds. And also they've got enough attacks to actually Dick Gotrek. They can do it without support, and when they've got support, because they can get additional attacks if Marathi's in combat next to them, then they can really, you know, they can take him out very easily. So my main bully piece is no longer much of a bully piece, but I still used it as a bully piece. I was quite pleased with that. So I'm going into this match thinking, right, and I'm going it, and I know I'm playing Russell the night before. So, like, you've got an entire evening of thinking, right, I'm in a red matchup against a red player. So what I did, something that I normally don't do, I was staying at Ben Harper's. Thank you, Ben Harper. The chap that ran it was Steve and Lewis, the people that ran the event. They kindly let me stay at Ben's. And I made sure that I just went straight to bed. So a lot of the time, if I know who I'm playing the next day, I'll be up all night coming up with a strategy and, you know, really trying to solve the problem. And I just figured I am going to get a good night's sleep. This is the best way I'm going to approach this. I'm going to just go to the table. I'm going to try and keep my mind as clear as possible. And I'm just going to let the game develop. And I want to talk to you about how to approach if you know you're in a bad matchup, do's and don'ts. Okay. So don't walk up to your opponent and tell them that you're in a bad matchup. Fucking hell. Right. Walking up to the table and going, oh, I'm up against it here. Oh, what does your list do? Oh, yeah, it's really good. Oh, this is a, you know, don't piss and moan. What you'll do is you'll flood your brain with cortisol, which is a stress hormone. It will shut down the front of your brain and you won't be able to think straight. What you should be doing is going up and saying, I'm excited to play this game, even if you're not. Even if you're Owen playing Matt and his Seraphon for the 100th time. You don't say, you know, you just say, I'm excited. And there's a bit of, there's some psychology behind this. Let me wax lyrical about some TED Talks that I enjoy. But one of them is going on about our brains have evolved to recognize patterns. So since you were very small, every time you said or heard that someone's excited, okay, your brain is flooded with dopamine. It's like, yes, I'm going to get some sweets, or yes, I'm going to go see my nan, or yes, I'm going to Butlins, or whatever. You can lie to your brain. You can trick it. So if you say I'm excited, your subconscious mind will release dopamine, a little bit of dopamine, okay, which will help. And in fact, do this as an experiment. When you're walking down the street and you're not particularly excited, so say you're going to the shop to pick up some fucking sugar or whatever, just say to yourself, I'm excited. And I bet a little fucking smile happens. Like there's a little smile happens, right? Your body just reacts to that. You can do this in any situation as well, by the way, not just Warhammer related. Anytime you're scared of something, you can say, I'm excited, and your brain will give you
I'm smiling right now just thinking about going to the shops, Darren, so it's already worked.
Okay, so the first thing I did when I saw Russell was, you know, shook his hand. I'm excited to play Russell, and that would sort of allowed me to, in a difficult situation, I had opportunities to win in turn four and turn five. If I'd have got those priorities, I think I'd had opportunities to close out the game. Now that's not why I lost the game. I'm not blaming it on the priority. I shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. And I will tell you that's my misplay, why I lost this game.
Okay.
But I think because I went into that game with a clear head, a clear night's sleep, a positive sort of outlook, and I still wanted to play I knew Russell's army is really good at playing this strategic game. I knew my army was really good at playing the strategic game. His army was better at fighting. So that, you know, that's doing the assessment. That's why I assess it as a red matchup, because we do the same at one thing and he does much better at the other. So I knew right from the off, I'm going to try and just ease past him, and I'm going to try and win this game by getting my grand strategy and stopping his grand strategy. So trying to basically avoid him. Avoid fighting him, basically. But it didn't pan out that way. I made a mistake round three with my Gotrek movement, and that allowed him to get the W. But I had opportunity to win in a bad scenario against a bad matchup. So I'm really pleased. I walked away with a 13-7 as well. So 7 points out of a double red. I think anyone, if that was a team situation, everyone would be patting me on the back, etc.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, at least that's what I've been telling myself, because I fucking hate losing.
And the last game, round five?
So this was against a 12-year-old, Orfeo. Bless him. Okay. That's how I pronounce it, Owen. Orfeo.
Orpheus.
Orpheus. Oh, it's even cooler. It's even cooler than Orfeo. Orpheus. Sounds like a fucking X-Men, doesn't he?
Good. Well, it's Matrix, yeah. Isn't it, almost?
Yeah. Well, anyway, a really sweet lad. It was Nurgle, and I felt like I either try to win this game big and I look like a C-U-N-T, or yeah. I lose to a 12-year-old and I look like a C-U-N-T. So it wasn't
my fault.
As a competitive player, it's not how I wanted to sort of end the tournament. And I think because I felt like that, I didn't give him as good. So this is when Owen was like looking over at me and he was like, Owen, come on, at least give him a game. I gave him a nice standard game. I didn't give him a terrible game, but I could have definitely made a bigger deal out of it. Apologies to Orpheus. But he, in this matchup, it's Nurgle. I know that so looking at his list, it was built to summon.
Yeah.
So my game plan right from the off was to limit his summoning pieces. I've got tree revs in my army, so I can jump onto one of his trees and stop them summoning points. And when he put some Nurglings down in my deployment, I made sure that when I deployed quite spread out, which is not often what I do, but I wanted to make sure that when he brought down his Nurglings, because I gave him the first turn, he's obviously trying to do that to get an extra 3 points of summoning. I made sure that I had pieces that I knew could confidently go in there and wipe them out. It did take me away from the objectives, but with one unit, but because I'm Sylvan F and I've got so many overgrown pieces, it's not too much of an issue. And also I've got strike and fade as well. So I was able to kill the Nurglings early. So I basically correct. Sounds wanky. I correctly assessed this 12-year-old's plan. It sounds like I'm really, I mean, let's fucking be real. He was round five. He got 3 wins with his Nurgle. And he played some really nice Warhammer. I just don't think he understood what Gotrek did, because Gotrek got Blowab and Orgots, which was in his army. Because I put Gotrek centrally, ran him up the board first turn, 10 inches, as I often do. And his big pieces were central, and perhaps they should have been on the flanks.
Yeah.
But he'd never played Gotrek before. So I went into that game. It's very confident, let's say.
Yeah.
I also know that Nurgle struggled to do battle tactics, you know. Mm. So I'll tell you about that quickly. So to the chaps that feud on at In the Fens asked me to do a talk on the Saturday night about coaching and onwards, which was, it felt really sweet, actually, seeing our like logo in all their sort of like promotional material, and they went and put it at the back of the room, and it felt like I was a legitimate outfit. It was really nice. And I've got a fear of public speaking. So I'd spent the entire day, whenever I was talking to people about it, rather than telling them I'm scared, I told them, can you guess? I'm excited about tonight. I was fucking terrified. I was lying to myself. But every time I said excited, obviously, I'm getting dopamine rather than cortisol. And I managed to get through it. However, I likened in our Discord, in the Onwards Discord, people are encouraged to stream their TTS games. And if they put live on, I said, this is an invite for you to come in and watch the game, a bit like the classic British pastime of dogging. And as I said that, I looked up and Orpheus, this 12-year-old, is in the audience. And I was like, oh, my fucking God. And his dad's next to him. I'm thinking, this is not the talk that these two were expecting.
You know.
Yeah, I know. And I was, you know, as and you can imagine how nervous I was. And I was like, oh, fucking hell, why have I done that? Anyway, I apologized to him after the father, and he laughed. And I don't think Orpheus knows what dogging is. So hopefully, he didn't
before. He does now.
Dad, what's dogging?
Yeah, Google. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, so going back to the game, I'm sorry, because I did go a bit off kilter there. But I was confident that I could out strategize them. I could outfight them in the center with Gotrek, obviously. So I was quite confident that actually I was going to stand on the circles pretty well because stuff's going to be dying around Gotrek. And I'm going to I knew what from experience. I knew what the list is trying to do because I actually quite enjoy running Nurgle summoning builds. So to sum up, because Alex, your next question is going to be like, was I correct in my assessments?
Yes, that was going to be my next question. Yeah, exactly.
I think I did. Now you've got to bear in mind as well. I haven't played Sylvaness since 2017, and I'd certainly never played an army with that few. I had like 13, 14 models, so it's not a style I'm complete very au fait with. However, I went back to basics each time and just tried to really understand what I was trying to do. I always think it's important to be the person that's driving the game. So I always try to put my plan rather than my opponent's plan because it's the least stressful way to play Warhammer, being proactive rather than reactive. If you can handle stress, you know, and you are a reactive player, fair play to you. I'm not that good. Because I was super conscious of my grand strategy, because I was super conscious of my opponent's grand strategies, and because I was super conscious of how I felt they, you know, the very fundamentally how they were trying to play, I got a 4-1 and I'm super pleased with that. Fantastic weekend.
Yeah, good. Excellent. I mean, 4-1s across the board then, is that? All three?
Yeah. Who came higher, boys? Who came higher? I think that was
you came higher, Owen. Well done, brother.
Best loser, yeah.
Best loser.
You know that thing you talk about not being salty about anything, Owen? You know,
yeah.
You know that mention, yeah. That happens to winners as well. You know.
True. Okay. I'm just surprised Jack stuck around for the awards. That was the big.
He came third, didn't he? That was a podium, so I guess.
Yeah.
Right. This is a long one, but a good one. So I think what we'll do, guys, is we'll go to our final awesome section. And Darren, take it away.
It's really late. So I'm just going to say the plays, the misplays.
The plays and the misplays. The plays really and the misplays. The plays really like and the misplays.
I much prefer ASMR, Darren.
I like that. The plays and the misplays. The plays and the plays. The plays and the misplays. The plays and the plays.
It feels like we're going to be doing all that. What is it the ASMR people do? They do lots of like ticking and clocking.
I'll do some now, but don't get excited by any of this.
No.
yeah, exactly. All that stuff. Wow. Right. This is the ASMR misplays section. Right. Who wants to take us off? Blow us off.
Bash us off.
Who wants to bash us off?
Have you had enough of me or should I tell you about my mistake we've got?
I've never had enough of you, Darren. None of your stories and the rest of it. So
this is the board state. It's my turn three. And I've got Gotrek centrally. Russell has got 15 snakes and a tree lord protecting his home objective. Marathi is off to my bottom left, threatening because she's just actually charged my general, who managed to stay alive because she was in defensible terrain, and she had the spite thing that had gone off, and Russ missed his roar and rolled a lot of twos. Because Marathi is very difficult to stop, and he managed to get her in there on a 9-inch charge, but I think Hagnar get plus one, or Daughters of Cain get plus one, to charge round two. So I bugged her out of there. But the misplay is Gotrek had three paths that he could have taken. He could have charged onto Russell's home objective that had the 15 snakes and the tree lord. But the tree lord, if it makes you fight last, then you don't get to swing again because you've already swung in the fight last stage. So I wasn't going to get to double swing with Gotrek. And also, I wrongly figured that having Gotrek up there would be a bad thing. I actually, thinking about it, it would have been a good thing, and I'll explain why in a moment. The other thing I could have done was brought Gotrek on, just run him onto my home objective. So I could have won. I could have given myself a better chance at winning by simply moving. Sometimes you don't have to fight. Sometimes you just need to move. So if I thought about it, I could have just ran Gotrek onto my home objective, which would have defended it very well. And also there was a defensible piece of terrain and a impassable piece of terrain that was around this objective. So if Russell's snakes had threatened Gotrek, he could have redeployed or simply moved to the, had his back to the these pieces of terrain. So not enough of the snakes would have got around to actually kill him. So I don't even think if it had moved that way, Russell would have even bothered charging him, which would have kept my home objective safe and thus my general safe. The option I went for, because I'm a fucking tit, is I decided to move him across to Marathi and attempt a 9-inch charge because I wanted to take another 3 wounds off her. I got fixated on killing her. She only had 6 wounds left. So with only 3 wounds left in her turn, that would have forced her to run away from Gotrek. That was what my thinking was. But if I, when I got home, and obviously I replay games over and over in my head, The second option I described there would have been the safest one. I wouldn't have had to roll any fucking dice. Oh, that's really annoying that I didn't see that play. But even if I'd threatened his home objective, I could have charged his tree lord. I imagine he'd have redeployed his snakes away if I moved towards those as well, because he was obviously, there is a chance he misses the 3+, right, isn't there? But then I could have chinned that tree lord, and then it would have meant in Russell's third turn, he would have charged Gotrek and killed Gotrek. That's fine because he's on his home objective in the third turn. And then it would have taken 2 turns to get down to my objective, in which case by that time I could have either bugged out or like I could have sacrificed some scythe hunters to keep my general alive, which would have given me my grand strategy. What actually happened was in his third turn, made a 9-inch charge into Gotrek and surrounded him. And then won the fourth turn priority, which meant he then charged my Kernoth hunters that were on my home objective that were in the wood. And then he won the fifth battle round. So then he charged my general. And I couldn't escape with my general because he closed down all the overgrown pieces of terrain. And I missed a cast to create a tree and bug out of there in turn 4. So it was like a... That so I said earlier that like I could have still won the game after turn 3 if I'd have won turn 4 priority or turn 5 priority, but the point at which I lost that game was in turn 3 when I made, out of those 3 options, I just chose a really fucking stupid one. Looking back at it, right? But this is a good lesson here. So after losing Gotrek and losing the fourth priority, like I was in a bad spot, but I still had the presence of mind to think to myself, well, if I win turn 5 priority, I can still win this. So Russell did charge in and kill my Kernoth hunters, but in my turn I didn't retreat my one Kernoth hunter that survived. The reason being is I wanted it to die, because if I won the turn 5 priority, I would have been able to get my general and my tree lord out of that situation if I'd have managed to cast a spell, the one that creates trees, because at that point I was killed Marathi. She was nowhere near me to unbind me. So it would have been very difficult for him to stop me. I could have cast a tree and got out of there, which would have meant that I'd have got an additional point for having a locus on a point. My grand strategy would have been correct. And Russell had 2 canaries that hadn't fought and that I wouldn't have killed. So he wouldn't have got his grand strategy. So I had an opportunity to win the game, even though it had all gone completely tits up. But I didn't let that, you know, I fought to the end. If things go tits up, keep your brain nice and clear. Stand up straight. Take a breath. Look at the board state. Tell yourself, what can I do? And in that situation, I told myself, I can still win this. If I win the priority, then I can do this, that, and the other. But unfortunately, I didn't. But that isn't why I lost the game. I lost the game because I fucked up Gotrek.
Great. Thank you very much. Matt, misplay.
Oh, God. It's got to be for some reason when I'm playing Owen, despite having almost zero screens, I decided to deep strike the Basti, my second Basti. So I had one that was like sort of off fighting an objective, not really in any danger. And then Owen had had a go, and he sort of like forced me to use my screens to like to score my turn one battle tactic, which was to capture an objective with skinks. And he forced me to like charge in some skinks and summon some more skinks because of, you know, like, you know, Bellacor.
It was a really good play, actually. Like, it was a really, that was a good play in that game in exactly that moment, because I thought that you pumped everything into my Claws of Karanak, and I had the one guy with two wounds left with one at the end of the hero phase, and I Murderlust tagged your skinks to try and stop the battle tactic, and I was like,
yeah, what's exactly
you here? And you'd given them fly, so it meant that you could retreat and fly over the back. I thought that was really cute, but it still didn't allow you to get on with enough.
No,
no. So you summoned them, and you used the 7-inch summon from the stave to then charge them into some dogs, I think.
That was the trouble. I was charging the dogs, so I had to have enough on, because I knew the dogs would kill a fair few.
But I think you were slightly, I wouldn't say on tilt, but you were a bit shook by how the first turn had gone. So that probably factor into the misplay that you, because I don't know if it was a super bad misplay, but you just put your Basti a little bit, you know, he was a bit.
Well, I wanted to drop him down because, like, I was like, well, I basically left my slan a little exposed. And I was like, well, I need to plug that gap. But in retrospect, I don't think you would have got quite far enough in with the Thirster anyway to sort of, I mean, you know, do the fight the slan directly. If the big boom went off as well, that would have been bad. But, you know, I like to ride those dice rolls sometimes, you know, live on the edge. But it did mean I just handed you this Basilodon for absolutely nothing. It came down, it died.
and it was like, point.
Would you say you got too excited, Matt? Would you say that you were too excited?
Just say you're excited, Matt.
I was so excited to give Owen a blood tithe. You know, I love giving free blood tithe. That's what it was.
Happens to the best of us. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Owen, misplay.
So I've got a play. My main play for the weekend was I spent one blood tithe and I murderlusted. That was great.
I mean, sure, great. Is that? I'm hoping it goes further than this.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that one out there.
Right. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Thanks.
And then I had what I always think is quite a cute play. So I've got my main misplay is a new category which we call a list play, which is basically when you slavishly stick to keeping a Boomthirster in your list because you like him, and when you realize that he lets you down all the time. So so I've got a list misplay, which is the Bloodthirster. So I think he's going to go now. I thought I'd done a really cute play in game 5 against Peter, because after frustrating him, as I described, for a long time and Bellacoring the Vampire Lord and Zombie Dragon, he did the right thing and he was like, fuck it. I'm going to put an ethereal save onto Neferata. I'm going to fly her out over the screens. I'm going to come and kill something. And I was like, cool. Okay, I think that's fair. You need to break out and do something. So he flew Neferata over. And then I did my usual cute thing, which I like to do, which is I redeploy in range of my Boomthirster, who always strikes first. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to redeploy. So it was a cute play, and I redeployed back, which meant that if he charged Bellacor, he would definitely take a Boomthirster to the face, or she would. The Boomthirster attacked, did pretty well, actually. Did, I think, 11 wounds or 9 wounds to Neferata. Nice. And then he proceeded to do 1 damage with the little scratchy talon. And ASMR moment. Hold on a little. Hopefully that comes through. The little scratchy. 1 damage went through, and he one-shotted Bellacor, which was cute. So my cute play turned into his great play. And I also found out that he did that to Adam Kunis's Frosted on Stonehorn in the previous round.
Oh, lovely.
Little bit of Neferata. Hold on, little Neffy.
My Neferata never does that.
Little Neffy, little Neffy scratch. Yeah.
A little Neffy scratch. So yeah, that was some plays and misplays and all rolled into one. You're welcome.
Fantastic. Right. Yeah. Shall I end it off?
It's been a long one.
This is a long one. I've got a misplay.
Yes, you played some games. Let's go, Alex.
I know. Nice. So I'm trying out lots of different stuff at the moment, and my misplay revolves around Soulblight and Legion of Night, and I'm not sorry for revealing all of this, because fuck you guys anyway. So Legion of Night, my misplay was I was trying out the Lumineth, and I thought I'd bank a very easy battle tactic at the start of the game, which is to cast one spell that's not unbound, because I was out of range of all the unbinds.
Oh, I know what's coming.
But unfortunately, Legion of Night have a lovely automatic heroic action, which means they get to teleport. And so the my lord teleported within range of 30. I have to cast a spell to get the battle tactic, and unfortunately we primaled off, and I lost the primal off, and so I was automatically down a battle tactic that I thought would have been an auto battle tactic. So watch out for that heroic action, because I if it was in their turn, I think I'd pick up on it more, but the fact that it's in your turn as well as a teleport,
it's just silly, isn't it?
The sequence is a real catching one. So just be on the lookout for that heroic action teleport in your own turn.
People not normally use it to like bring the Morbeg's Claw dude forward to then blizzard something off. But you wouldn't think of it being used reactively to.
Because then they can then in their turn bug out in your turn, so they can go forward and do blizzard with impunity, which is
exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. So just be careful, because I thought, oh, this can be an easy one, no one binds in range, battle tactic in the bag, and then boom, within 30, and it's like, oh god, okay. So that was the first one, and the second one was, despite that, I thought, okay, let's go and see what I can do. I had an Eltharion, I was using a list similar to Rune that he talked about on our podcast. Go listen to that one. And there was a little window, little sneaky little Eltharion sized window. I could squeeze him in between a couple of bats and some building to get him into Nagash. So I cast the double move spell on him, Speed of Heesh, to try and get him in there. And I had another charge across to charge into some zombies on an objective. And I completely forgot the counter charge.
I knew you were going to.
I completely forgot the counter charge. So for those of you that don't know, it's wholly within 12 of a charging unit. You can now charge any unit into another one. Mm-hmm. So
you're loving Soul Blight, aren't you?
Anyway. So the wardens went into the other unit, and then the bats counter charge to block the Eltharion charge, which if you just do the Eltharion charge first, it happens.
There's there a lesson go. There, Alex. You know, you always roll the most important charge first anyway, in case you need to re-roll it. Like, what are you playing at?
Yeah, but I like to roll the important one last as a big dramatic thematic fluid style moment, Owen. You see,
that's all right. I understand, Alex.
I play on vibes like Matt does, you see.
So. Yeah, exactly. It's all about
like
vibes.
Sounds like you lose on vibes more like.
I don't think me getting that charging would have changed the outcome, to be fair. But yes, so there you go. The Soulblight Nagash horror.
It's a nasty list, that. It is a nasty list.
Yeah. So watch out for heroic action and watch out for those counter charges. They are brutal. But yeah, so hey, those Alan, were my yeah.
This is really good. If you want to get better at Warhammer, right? I've heard there's this, it's quite well regarded. There's this podcast that people think quite highly of.
Party at the Old Points. brilliant. No, sorry, which one?
This one, you melt.
Oh yeah, but I just don't listen to you guys. I just, you know, I'm as I said, I'm here for the waffle. So
right,
lots of that. There's been a shitload of that.
And with that, I think that's the end. So it's been, I hope you guys enjoy it. It's been a long one, but I think it's a really nice one, actually, because lots of the questions, as I said at the start, revolve around, I don't know how to assess different matchups and things. So I hope you all got some interesting nuggets of information from all this. Thank you very much, Matt, for coming on and taking all of Owen's violence.
As you know, I'm just here. I'm a punching bag for Owen. That's all I am, really. It's a cry for help.
I you can be my punch bag off the table, and I'll be your punch bag on the table. How about that?
Oh, cute.
Oh, that's like cute. A weird. Anyway, I was going to go very dark there, but I'm not going to go that way. So yeah, so thank you very much, Matt, for coming on.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Darren, Owen, pleasure as always. Thank you very much. And for all of you, do keep sending your questions in and any messages. We love to see them, so please do send them in. Thanks again. Be kind. Look after each other. And we'll catch you all next time. So cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.